Hello once again, fair listeners, and welcome to Part of Your World, EarthJet.net's Disney animated podcast. And I am, as ever, Christian, podcaster, demigod of the image and word, hater of men. And with me is my little sis, the master wavefinder who stands out from the crowd, Emma.
Oh, shucks. You're so sweet.
Yeah. And this is going to be our final, I guess, main episode for now. We're going to cover Moana 2, which is still in theaters, and as well as Once Upon a Studio, which was the Walt Disney Company's celebration of their 100th anniversary, mainly the 100th anniversary of the animation studio from which their evil empire all began. So we covered the first Moana film, and we both have now seen Moana 2 in theaters.
Yes, I saw it just once, and you saw it twice, correct?
Yes, once the Friday after Thanksgiving, and then once again yesterday, just so that I was fresh in my mind.
Okay. I saw it like 5 days ago, and I have been listening to the soundtrack of it just to refresh myself, especially with the songs. And I did talk to my friend who worked on the film.
Oh.
She didn't have that many tidbits. It was a really big production, so she did like a lot of work on it, but she has a favorite song though, which I will let you know at the end.
Oh, great. This is a good segue because this was actually originally going to be a series on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And it was eventually reworked into a sequel, ostensibly because they felt the original film deserved a big screen sequel and because they're impressed by what they saw. But I think the real reason is probably the fact that Strange World and Wish underperformed by quite a bit, so they probably needed a fast hit.
Yeah, and I think TV shows don't have as good of a return on investment sometimes. I mean, it's good for pushing subscribers to Disney Plus, but it's easier to monetize something, especially something like Moana that was so popular in the theaters.
Yeah. So it has some of the same creative team as the first one. Jared Bush returns to the screenplay, and Mark Mancina and Opetaia Fowey, well, pardon my pronunciation, a few other things I'll probably struggle to say. They came back for the musical score, but Clements and Musker didn't show up for this one, or didn't return for this one, and neither, crucially, did Lin-Manuel Miranda, although was the main cast did.
And in Lin-Manuel Miranda's place was Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, who I honestly don't know that much about, except that they wrote the, like, unauthorized Bridgerton musical, which was, like, a big, like, to-do. Everyone's like, oh my god, this is so good, this is amazing.
Have you seen it, or heard it?
No, I haven't seen it. I don't know if it's actually, I don't even know if it originally, like, I don't even know if they made it into like a stage musical. I think they just made an album, like wrote songs based on Bridgerton. And I think they started doing it on TikTok because that was right when I started joining TikTok and I was like, what is this shit? Like, I don't know what's going on. Anyway,
it could be very interesting, but so we're not, because of this is still in theaters and because it's, there are probably people like waiting to see it. We're not going to do the beat by beat synopsis. We couldn't do that even if we wanted to. I'm just going to give the premise pretty quickly, and we're going to go over general thoughts and then some more spoilery territory later. So Moana 2 is set about 3 years after the events of Moana 1, and Moana embarks on another ocean odyssey, this time with three human crewmates plus Hei Hei the Rooster and Pua the Pig. So Moana receives this vision from her ancestor, Tatoeivasa, just before she's like nearly struck by lightning. And Tatoeivasa, we learn, is, you know, the chieftain, her ancestor, who had this little soul patch and was bald and was voiced by Lin-Manuel Miranda in the last film. That's his name. She has a vision from him, her distant ancestor, and she learns that she has to follow a comet to the lost island of Motufetu, which was the linchpin of Moana's ocean-going ancestors, until the thunder god Nalo sunk the island Atlantis style. And if she doesn't, her people will go extinct. So Moana and company, including Maui and an unexpected ally, have to race to Motufetu and raise it from the depths of the ocean in order to bring her peoples back together. And they face new obstacles and opponents, including a truly giant clam, a mad bat lady or bat woman, and the wrath of the thunder god Nalo. Is there anything, like, in terms of broad strokes that I missed?
No, I think that's it. I'm trying to think. Yeah, so they basically, you know, in the first movie, it was like, our nature is dying, we need to save it. This was like, our people are dying, we need to save it. I think the implication was like, we got to stop before inbreeding happens. Like, that's
possibly, yes.
Honestly, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. And she gets the vision while she's being like sworn in as sort of like the chief
navigator.
Like, Wayfarer, yeah. So she's she's like being promoted, and it's during like her promotion ceremony. I think it's an interesting like premise. I like that we're seeing more of the world, and it definitely, I mean, spoiler alert, it definitely sets up for like another one. Mm-hmm. I liked that I guess this is more down the breakdown. I like that the Kakamora come back. Mm-hmm. I like that she had a bigger crew, and I liked that it's not Hey. What's the pig's name?
Pua, I think.
Pua. I like that Pua was on the journey, because Pua missed the first one. It was just Hey. I'm glad that we got to see Pua in the film.
Okay.
Anyway.
So do you want to give like your overall thoughts?
Yeah. So I thought it was a fun time. Mm-hmm. I went into it knowing like everyone was saying, it's fine, but it's not as good as the original. I also love the original. I love Lin-Manuel Miranda. I think he's a genius. I think it's a really hard act to follow. Like, anyone is going to... basically, anyone would, like, suffer after that. Because he has, like, sort of a good mix of songwriting but storytelling in his songs. I felt like the songs in this were pretty meh, except for one or two. Mm-hmm. I felt like the random introduction of her little sister, I was like, what? So this is supposed to take place 3 years after her original adventure. Mm-hmm. That girl is like at least four, I think. I think she's like, maybe she's three or four. So then her mom should have been like visibly pregnant during Moana, the first one. Mm-hmm. I think it might make more sense to make it like 5 years later. I don't know. I felt like that whole thing like threw me off for a minute. But it was cute. It was cute to see her like sort of grow up. And like in the first movie, she felt like a hesitant to leave the island because of her parents. But now that she's an adult, she's like hesitant to leave the island because of her sister. So it gives her like additional motivation as an adult. I think the best part of it was I'm going to wreck her name, Auli Cravalho.
Yes.
Her voice is stunning. I could listen to her sing anything and I'd be like, oh, that was the best song ever. I really love how she like matured in this movie. She's definitely not like a young kid anymore. She's more of an adult. I love The Rock, so nothing to complain about there. Mm-hmm. And I like that she had like a little gang, although I don't know if I don't think the old man was super necessary. Like, I know they're like, oh, we need him to, like, grow food on the boat. But, like, we didn't really need him. He was just there for, like, comedy, which is fine. Like, you need that sometimes. But, I think that was it. And I like the, who's the Montagi? Montagi, I like her.
Yeah, Montagi, yeah.
I'm excited to see more of her. My friend who worked on the film, she recalled something, but she doesn't know 100% for sure if this is correct. She thinks that originally how do you say it?
I thought it was Matangi before the film was released. I think it's Matangi.
Matangi was originally going to be part of like the crew that like joins, but I'm glad that she sort of positioned herself as like an adversary, but also like maybe possibly an ally in the future. Because she is trapped. But I like her. I felt like the scene... there are like little things throughout that I thought were like really fun. But what about you? What did you think about it?
So overall, I would say it's okay, but not spectacular. It's not the best sequel, but not the worst. There are a lot of familiar beats from the first film. The fact that they're in like this sort of... Instead of like the Land of Monsters, they're in this giant clam, and the fact it all boils down to sort of a showdown with a god towards the end, and like the songs are definitely like sort of occupy the niches of the previous ones, and there's some I like more than others, but I can mostly take or leave them. I think it like following up Lin-Manuel Miranda, however you feel about him, is a thankless task.
I think anyone who does that is pretty much screwed. I think, you know, I felt like one of the songs in this was a little bit more poppy, which I felt like was good for her as an adult to sing, but the rest of the songs I felt like were forgettable, especially like the equivalent of You're Welcome, which I think I'm trying to remember the name of.
The training song
that The Rock sings. It just is not the same. Like, they tried too hard to make him sing, and he's just not a good singer. I'm sorry. Yeah, can I get a chi-hoo? Like, what? Who the fuck?
It's just a training montage. I think that one, I liked it more for the animation and visuals, and the fact that he had, like, this sort of, like crazy fire instrument, like, in front of these, like, a non-existent crowd of people.
I thought each song sort of had, like, a partner in the first film, so there's, like, the We're Back, which is like Where You Are.
Yeah.
And I feel like that We're Back was not as good as Where You Are, because even in like the song, there's some in the original, like Where You Are, there's some line about like, oh, we don't need a new song. This old one's all we need.
Yeah.
So it's like maintaining that it's like there's the top layer of the song. And then if you dig underneath, they're like, okay, there's this underlying culture of like, we don't need anything to change. It's fine as it is. Mm-hmm. Stick to the status quo, to quote High School Musical. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the We're Back didn't have that same like double layer of like good exposition, but also like, and meeting the townspeople, but also like more undercurrent. I'm glad that the grandmother came back though. I really like her.
Yep.
What was your favorite song in it?
So I think it's probably, I guess the Oscar bait song, but probably Beyond. I think that was the sort of linchpin song. And I liked that at the end they had, instead of having another artist cover, they had Ioli Cravalho reprise the song over the credits. But I think with a group called Tavaca, I think I mentioned them last time. I think they were involved with, I think their opatai is like basically choir or musical group.
I love that one. I've listened to both to the original, the reprise, and then the end credit version. I think the end credit version is actually better. It's a little bit more up tempo, and there's like not a slowdown in the middle like there is in the one used in the movie. Before this, I sent Christian a live version of her singing it, Ioli Cravalho, and she is just like, I got chills. She is such an amazing singer. She is such a presence. I hope that we as a society utilize her more than she has been utilized. Cause she is just like, her voice is fucking amazing. I could listen to her sing to the worst song ever, and I'd be like, wow, what a great song. Thank you.
I want to hear her sing Friday.
Yeah. But I would say my second favorite is maybe Get Lost.
That was a definite standout. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but It sounded kind of like something from Dreamgirls, maybe.
I'll have to listen to it again. Okay. What?
I mean, granted, I've seen Dreamgirls once, it was a long time ago, but sort of, it felt, there's some other like pop song or a famous song that it reminded me of that I can't put my finger on.
So maybe it's more like Motown-y, sort of like
Yes.
jazzy. Okay. I will listen to it again, and I will let you know in our follow-up episode. What? Because that's interesting. I do like that it's sort of more like it is more like jazzy. Like she's sort of giving off this energy of like a bit of a hero, a bit of a villain, which I like. I like this ambiguity. I feel like when you lay out strict like good people, bad people, it's not as interesting. But like Maui, the first film where he's like a total dick. Also, like her friend, that's like more interesting than just a straight up villain.
Yeah, I guess we should probably get to some of the new characters. I think Matanga
Oh
is a good
yeah,
one.
sorry.
I like her. I think she was sort of marketed as the antagonist, so it's a little surprising she's not quite a henchman, not quite an ally. I mean, there probably is going to be a more, based on how well this is going to be done. There almost always going to be a Moana 3 where we learn more about her. But there is part of me that's like,
Post-credit sequence too.
oh yeah, we'll get to that. But even that
Yeah.
doesn't resolve like what I'm going to say. She has some sort of relationship with both Maui and Nalo. She's like Nalo's prisoner. We don't. It could be like a Megara Hades situation. Do
Yeah,
you
I thought
remember?
sort of like a Persephone Hades situation kind of thing, where it's like a prisoner. Like it reminded me of this is so bad. Percy Jackson and the Olympians, like how Rosario Dawson is sort of like the slave, but also like the wife of Hades. It's sort of like that, where she's like wants to get out, but also like sort of is embracing her fate. I don't know. It's definitely one of the like in Hercules, the Megara kind of thing.
And there's also the distinct possibility, I don't know if they'll pull the trigger on this, possibly not, but that maybe she's a potential love interest for Moana or has something for her.
I don't think so. I
I mean,
think.
some, I mean, some, I know some people take that way, and there's like a whole discussion about like sort of queer coding of villains or certain characters, but she's mysterious, and that could either that's I know that for some, I'm sure for some people that's kind of frustrating, but is also kind of appealing.
I think Matangi is maybe more of a love interest for Maui.
Possibly.
Because she's sort of. Like not really a god. She's not. I don't think she's a demigod, but she definitely has like powers like he has. And from what they imply, they're both pretty like 3,000 years old or whatever. I think more of a realistic love interest for Moana would be Moni or Loto.
Yeah, we should probably get to the her crew.
Yeah, that was my segue.
Yeah. So who is so you said you weren't as high on what's his name? Is it Kiel or Kiele?
No, I liked him. I don't. I think they maybe needed a stronger excuse for him to be on the boat than like, oh, we need someone to be a farmer in the base of our boat, which you know what I mean?
I think it
Like,
was the oh, go ahead, sorry.
no, I think if he had been maybe like a grumpy, like, I don't know.
I think he was there like just to like, sort of like spark off of the other characters, like sort of as a contrast. The one who said, "Oh no, not singing," and he grew on me gradually. And he had my favorite exchange of the film where he meets Maui. He's like when like Maui's actually is like trapped in sort of like shark tooth body brace. Actually, quite a bit like Thor and Thor at the beginning of Thor Ragnarok.
That's exactly what I thought too.
He says like you look like a kidney stone, and Maui replies, "You look like you're old enough to know what that is."
Yeah,
It was
no.
a great adult joke.
I think he was good, like for humor purposes. I understand. I just think they could have made up a little bit of a stronger excuse for why he was there. Maybe he was like a weather analyst or like, you know what I mean? He like he could have been like, well, he's like a farmer, but he's also like good at analyzing like the winds or whatever. I don't know. His use was a little bit weak there, but whereas I felt like Loto and Moni definitely were like, okay, he's like the brains and the brawn, like the knowledge, but also like the brawn. She is sort of like the technical brain.
Yeah, well, I guess we should get to Loto because she of the three, she is my least favorite.
Really? Okay.
A, she's a doom monger. Nobody wants a doom monger when they're on a dangerous voyage anyway. We're all like, death is already gonna be on your mind. But she kind of reminded me if Q was on James Bond's missions and was actually a backseat driver. She kept making like modifications to the ship that like endangered people on it as they were going.
Yeah, I felt like she was a little bit annoying. I wish she had like been given more like a here's why I'm so pessimistic kind of thing, and not just like I'm so pragmatic that I'm just gonna shit on all your hearts.
Yeah.
But I also felt like Moni was a bit annoying. Like at first it was funny how much of a fanboy he was, but I felt like he didn't have enough substance.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully we'll see them in the next movie and they can build out their like personas more. But this was very much like a surface level, like he's a fanboy, she's a practical one. Old man is Grumpster. Moana is like the team leader, you know?
I mean, I do like that he's like not like a musclehead or like he feels like he needs to like, you know, protect Moana or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, see? He's definitely not.
So he's not like a typical like male character in that way or like traditional male role.
What do you think about the Kakamura person who joined their like group?
That was a nice touch. I like that. They came back, but they were there for a bit of, like, to add a little more to the world. It turns out they're not just pirates, but they're actually refugees, and they actually have a stake in Motu Fitu being pulled out of the ocean. Because that, did they say their island was destroyed also?
Yeah, I think they were separated from their island.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't destroyed, but it was, like, when that connection was severed, mm-hmm. they haven't been able to find it again, so they need someone to restore, like, the connections
And they still had a bit of an edge. They actually overpowered the crew and said, we need you to do this and help us. We're going to have this truce, but if you're expendable at the same time.
Yeah. I like that they had, like, Heihei as, like, a deity. For like it was just like a throwaway scene where they like put him a throne. I was like, okay, that's kind of cute. That's kind of cute.
It's like a really ugly fish.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the fish that like vomits things. Yeah. No, I thought that was. I'm glad to see them again. I like these little tie-ins to the original. I like that they used back to the music. Back to like I like that they used some of the same like chants and some of the same tunes from the original.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of added onto it, especially to the Beyond song, where there's like a part where she's like, I am Moana, which is from, you know, the original, but they incorporate it into the song. So I think it was like, definitely not as good as the first, but it definitely could have been a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. You know? Definitely. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think they just played it too safe. I think they just stuck to the of the first one and then was like, okay, well, that worked.
Of like the recent Disney sequels, this is my favorite. It's a lot better than Ralph Breaks the Internet. I do like it more than Frozen 2. That does hinge a lot on me just preferring Moana to Frozen in general. And perhaps I'm like more forgiving of its flaws of it. Although I do think that the main song in this is like works for me better just because it's about like a literal voyage and, rather than like Elsa just hear like listening to the voices in her head.
Yeah.
I like Frozen 2 okay, and the first one wasn't as bad as I remember, so but not to like further rib on them, but I think your appreciation of this sort of depends on how much you like the characters already and how much you like the first one. I will say, and this sounds harsh as it is, I wouldn't say you need to like rush out and see this unless A, it's a cold winter day and you really want to escape to the South Pacific, like for an hour and a half. Or if you have like nieces and nephews you want to see it with, or indeed your own kids.
Yeah, I think it was like a fun time. It wasn't, I don't think it's going to be, you know, like life changing like moment. But I think it's like, it's fun. And I think it's going to set up for a third one, which hopefully maybe like Lin-Manuel Miranda will come back for.
I mean, you know this already. We should probably inform listeners what he's on instead of this.
What is he on instead of this?
He's in the live action weird Mufasa prequel that nobody asked for.
Oh yeah.
Which apparently is underperforming.
I believe that.
Yeah. I guess before we get into like the mid-credit sequence and like I guess some of the real spoilers, we should probably address like the ending also, but kind of tying back to Oh, maybe she's used it because I think that might be why Samaya is there. Like every now and then, like Disney films and other media, they'll have like a sort of kid identification character. And for me, it generally doesn't work or just can be a little distracting. I mean, kind of like Flounder and Chip and Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, it feels like it's a character there just for little kids to identify with.
I
Is
kind of
that.
agree with that, and also I think it's like her motivation, just like Belle's motivation is her father go out and voyage, because otherwise I think Moana would be like, okay, I am gonna sail and I'm not coming back kind of thing. Like she has like shown that she can be independent, and now she's not a kid, so she doesn't feel like this pull back to her parents, and like she's the master wave. So, but I think this is like her emotional tether to the island.
I could see that, but maybe it's
I think it's both of them. I think you're right that like we need like a cute little kid to be like, oh, it's like me, but I do think it's given her song, it is like her emotional tether. Because she even has like a thing like, will she understand why I have to leave? But like, I'm gonna come back. Because otherwise, what stops Moana from being like, okay, I'm gonna be like the ambassador to like Motu Nui and just like go to all these islands and not come back? You know what I mean? What and come back to visit? You know what I mean? She's an adult now. Why would she like go out and be, like a Maui? So.
One little thing I like is, well, I mentioned like the big ugly fish also. I like the little mud skippers that like that Maui surrounded by during his imprisonment. They remind me very much of Muppets.
Okay.
You know, like the sort of like big boggly eyes and sort of flapping mouth.
I don't have a huge frame of reference for Muppets. I am not like a Muppetsy person.
But there's
Sorry.
something about them reminding me of that. That's a minor thing. But I guess we should get. I mean, we've revealed a few things here and there that I hope aren't too spoilery. But I think getting into spoilers, what do you think of like the climax and then the ending and then the post-credit sequence?
Okay, so the climax is Moana like fake dying, right?
Well, no, she really is. She's died and resurrected.
Yes, yeah, so is the implication that she is now a demigod?
That is what Wikipedia and like the Disney Wiki says, and I'm not sure. I didn't really get that impression the first few times. Maybe I just wasn't critical enough. I mean, she gets like a sort of special tattoo, and I think that is supposed to seal it because it's not like a moving tattoo like Maui's, but it's also different from the tattoos that her people have at the same time.
Yeah, I think she is on the demigod track, which I like. I feel like she has now held her own against two gods, first like the Mother Earth and now like this other god. I don't know, like I think it makes her for future movies less of like an underdog that you root for, and more like, okay, so like if she's a god, like it's all
Basically,
good.
she's basically a super. Well, she kind of already was, but she's now a superhero.
Yeah, so like
Sort.
it's sort of, we sort of lose a little bit of the, she's a young girl taking on the world. Now she is a grown woman with lots of experience taking on the world, So I think it'll be interesting. I do like that they keep on being like, oh, like princess, and she's like, I'm not a princess. And like I like because when So for context, I saw it when I was in Princeton with our parents for Christmas, and I came back and my parents were like, so what's the context of Moana? I was like, well, let me explain this whole Moana first one to you guys. And I was like, well, she's the daughter of a chief. And my mom was like, oh, because she's a princess. I'm like, actually, she's not a princess. She like in this movie, she becomes her own. She's now like, I don't know, up there, but equivalent to her father, it seems like. And even in the first movie, she's like becoming the chiefess. Also, my parents were like, oh, so are Maui and Moana gonna bang now that she's an adult? I'm like, ew, no. So they were like, so then who's like Moana's love interest? I'm like, she doesn't have one. And they're like, yeah, okay. It's gonna be Maui. And I was like, oh my God. They're just too cynical for Disney.
No. So when we should also say at the very end, and this is what the show has been trying for, spoilers, that Maui is able to, he also has sort of like a sort of death and resurrection thing. He like temporarily loses his tattoos and godlike powers, but eventually he is able to pull Machu Picchu back up to, like from the depths. And early in the film, we have like Moana going up from these various islands looking for proof of other people and like calling on the sort of sea, like conch shell, like a trumpet. She actually hears, and she finally gets a response, and other people from elsewhere in the South Pacific, including apparently from Australia, like arrive on the island. I think like the first people they looked like some of the native people from there, or like the traditional look of them.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
I'm dancing around the A word because apparently it's inappropriate.
Oh. Okay. Got it.
So yeah, that's also an interesting setup. It is a problem with some sequels. This is, and this also will get us into the post-credits scene. There is like a lot of table setting for this one. It is one of those sequels that it exists in part to set up the further chapter. It doesn't stand up on its own in terms of story as well as other sequels can and do.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, it's far from the worst sequel I've seen. It's not even the worst sequel I've seen in theaters this year. That was Gladiator 2.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because that also had like a very familiar story, but the thing is, it just had like, in that one that you sort of had like Russell Crowe light and like Joaquin Phoenix, Mark 2 and 3 and stuff like that, and like other like characters, like lesser characters filling similar roles, whereas this one is, I mean, it's the same characters going through a similar thing and like similar beats, so it's still, I still wish it was more original and had more of its own voice.
I have an idea for your next podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Sequels.
I have thought about like that every now and then, like comparing and contrasting sequels or
remakes or, you know, reimaginings. There's a lot of reimaginings, remakes, you know.
Well, now we're getting into for better or worse territory. We should stay in our lane, at least for this episode.
Yeah, anyway.
I guess now is when we should get into mid-credit sequence and where we finally meet Nalo, who's we've kind of seen in the form of like storms and tornadoes and like purple lightning and stuff like that. But so he basically confronts Matangi. Basically, I think the implication is that he knows that he helped her, and basically you're mine, you're screwed. And then they get an unexpected visitor in the form of Tamatoa. Hooray!
I know. I knew you were going to be happy that he's back.
And he basically says, hey, I know this Moana, and I have a beef against her too. But Nalo doesn't seem like that impressed. It is quite noticeable that he's not shiny anymore. He has like none of like the treasures that like encrusted his carapace.
Okay, yeah.
But this did remind me a lot of the first mid-credit sequence. The mid-credit sequence in the first Avengers film, you know, like where Thanos is sort of being set up as the main villain of the universe.
Yeah, so they're sort of building out and setting up for this bigger guy.
Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me worry that, I sort of mentioned this with Wish, but Disney Animation might be learning the wrong lessons from the success of the MCU. I mean, it's just a worry. Yeah. It's not really based on anything. Maybe the parallels sort of end there. But that's the impression I got. But what do you think of the mid-credit sequence?
No, I think, I think it's definitely, well, I mean, they do introduce, like, this bigger-than-life figure, so it'd be weird if he just disappeared, because we sort of met his henchmen and saw him, like, in the first battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll start to see more of this in Disney movies, as, like, the sort of, like, overarching, like, enemy, like, it just keeps getting bigger, because the stakes keep getting higher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because honestly, I felt like after Moana, I was like, okay, so who is bigger than Mother Earth? Like
Zeus. Zeus. I don't know if Nalo is based on a specific god or if that's even like his name, but he did remind me of like a South Pacific Zeus.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know how they're going to, like, are there just infinite goddesses? Like, that's sort of like something that I would like to hear about. I do wish maybe they had introduced more of that in like the portion when that the like fanboy is like talking about sort of like the history, but I don't know. Maybe I missed it. Again, I only saw it once, and it's hard to recall a movie when you've only seen it in theaters because you're so distracted by everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I decided to see it again.
Yeah. But no, I think overall, I think it definitely doesn't, it's not equal to the first one, but what sequel is,
mm-hmm.
it's not better, but it's fine. It's like a, I don't want to score it quite yet.
I have a score for it.
Okay, well, I have a score for it too. I have a letter score, but then I do have a number score. Because I was about to say the letter score, but I didn't want to have it indicate. Well,
I think another thing we should bring up, and this kind of ties into Matangi, and maybe this is just like the fact of a sort of a constraint of a sequel, but Nalo, I think the implication is he is afraid of people because he decided to sink the island so that they wouldn't be together. And that, I guess, and that, this is a theme in, I guess, retellings of Greek mythology, the gods are actually afraid of mortals.
Yeah, I think it's less of a god thing and more of like when you think about how tyrants break down societies, it's like you separate people and you, because once they gang up together, that's when like you're fucked. So I think he did it less out of his fear of people and more out of fear of rebellion, which I guess it's fear of people. But I think he's like, if we separate the people, then no one can defeat me. You know what I mean? No, not like the people of Motunui could not defeat him. But if the people of like 100 islands band together, that's a big army, you know, which I sort of feel like is Moana, what Moana 3 will be like the Return of the King when all the armies come together, you know? Maybe this is like a Lord of the Rings thing. I mean, it is about a small person going on a journey.
or did you ever read or see the HBO adaptation of His Dark Materials?
I didn't. I read the first one, and I saw the movie of the first one, and then I read the second one, but I really can't remember it.
Okay.
I think it's a common theme in like series that like it's sort of. The last part is like everyone banding together. I mean, it happens in Harry Potter too, where like the people of Hogwarts, you know, Dumbledore's army, like the,
or like in Return of the Jedi, like to use an older example, like the sort of last stand against the Empire.
Yeah, no, I think it's a common trope, but it's like the Avengers, what is it, Endgame or Infinity War, where they all like different universes collide. So I think it's going to be that the third movie. Will hopefully be the final one. I hope they don't go too far and over abuse it.
Yeah.
I hope they're not using this little sister as like a setup for like, oh, this is like the new story. I'd love to see like a Maui prequel. Cause wasn't he like abandoned by his parents? And then he became like that sort of sounds like a sort of Hercules like origin story. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson is definitely like on board for more Maui. Cause he's doing Moana live action. So if Disney, if you're listening, let's see some Maui prequels. I'd like to see that.
It could be a good idea, but I also think that you kind of run the fear of oversaturation, and again we got a Mufasa prequel, and
I'm saying in the context of let's end with Moana 3, not extend it to Moana 4, and instead do something else, do like a spin-off.
We'll get to like the future of like and Disney animation later, and like what we like to see and what we're like don't want to see in a bit. But kind of getting to the past few episodes, I'm kind of glad we're ending now, because Encanto, I think I appreciated more a few years after I had some distance from it. Whereas the past few films have been so recent that I'm still having like trouble processing them, even if I'm never gonna like wish.
I'm glad that you didn't end on Wish and you're instead ending on Moana too. I think it's ending on a bit of a better note.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm trying not to factor in the fact that I hated that one so much, and I'm coming to this, and this is. I'm trying not to like say, oh, because this is as bad as Wish, this is better. I'm trying to like view it independently.
Yeah.
Even if we keep admitting that It's not the most original sequel in the world.
No.
But Emma, what do you give Moana 2 out of 5?
I give it a 3.5.
Okay.
I think, and my letter grade for it is a solid B. It's a pass. It's good. I think if it hadn't been in the shadow of a great original movie, I would like it more again, but you sort of need that. I feel like some of the songs are great. Definitely, Beyond is sort of like the highlight for me, but I think it is carried by her vocals. And yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I always feel like that with the sequels, especially in like trios, where I'm like, this wasn't the best, but if it's setting up for something better, then I'm okay with it. Like, I'm fine.
Okay.
So 3.5.
All right. And oh, and you is Beyond Emily's favorite song also, or did she have another favorite?
No, her favorite song is the one that the Bat Lady sings.
What? Oh yes, Get Lost.
Get Lost, which is a good one, but I'm more of a ballad girl myself. That's my fatal flaw. So, that one's my favorite.
Okay, I'm giving it a solid 3. Not life changing, but I think if you like the first film, but go in knowing that, well, I think you have a good time. I don't think it has like any fatal, other than sounds like really damning fate days. I think other than being like a bit too conservative or like playing a Tuesday, but I don't think it has any really fatal sequel flaws. So.
Yeah, and honestly, I think the composers, it's really hard to follow Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I think they did a good job. It's just hard to follow someone who, they're relatively new, so I think this is a good like starting up point for them. I think it's only going to get better, but I'm excited to see what they do next.
And I guess we should say this critically, it's been like pretty mixed, but financially, this has been very successful, unlike Strange World or Wish, and it's currently the fourth highest grossing film of 2024, just like ahead of Dune and Wicked, but behind Inside Out 2, Deadpool and Wolverine, and Despicable Me 4.
Okay.
And I think there's a decent chance it'll be nominated for, I think it'll be nominated for Best Original Song. I think because it made more money and is better well received, I think Inside Out 2 might be nominated for Best Animated Film instead of this. Or
Yeah,
because I'm thinking back to Frozen 2, because that, even though that did well financially, it wasn't as well received as Toy Story 4. And I think Disney didn't push both of them for, or whoever, by nominates also, they didn't push for both of them. They just pushed for Toy Story 4. So I think, and I think that happened
and
with
continue.
Tangled
I don't think
also.
it's gonna
They
get.
had they pushed for Toy Story 3 rather than Tangled, even though Tangled did pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they're not gonna push Moana 2 for best animated feature. I think it's a definite contender for best original song. I'm trying to think what I honestly can't recall any other original songs this year.
There were no new songs in Wicked, I don't
Yeah,
think.
exactly. But next year when Wicked Part 2 comes out and there is at least one original song in it, then I think, that'll be a contender. But I don't think there's any outstanding thing, for me at least that I've remembered. But that always happens with the Oscars is like, I'm like, what are these movies that just got nominated? What is this song? I've never heard this song in my damn life. So, but I would love to see Auli Carvalho sing at the Oscars. Did they perform How Far I'll Go?
I don't remember,
I don't
actually.
remember either. I have a vague recollection that they maybe did, but maybe I dreamt that.
Oh, well, I'll have to go back.
Above the ocean, now new skies call me by name, and suddenly nothing feels the same. I know the path that must be chosen. destiny in motion. And it's only just begun. Now will this life I've worked so hard for come undone? They're calling me. I must reply. But if I leave, how could I ever say goodbye? What lies beyond? Yeah. On the vast uncharted sea, will I lose myself between all that we know right here and what's out there beyond? Leaving all I love behind, with the future of our people still defined. Can I go beyond? If I'm not here to hold her hand, will she grow to
So, it's about what we said, and even though I'm also glad we're not in English, but we're actually not even in England in Moana, too. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Anyway, we're actually ending with something that came out before both it and Wish, and that's Once Upon a Studio, which is a 9-minute short film released on Disney Plus last year for the 100th birthday of Walt Disney Animation Studios, as well as the Walt Disney Company. It came out October 15th, but the official birthday was October 16th, 2022. So I'll try to get through the premise. There's a lot, just a quick synopsis. So on this 100th birthday of Walt Disney Studios in Burbank, like when the building is shut down, almost every animated Disney character, including Mickey and Minnie Mouse, like everyone up to and including Asha from Wish, all of them escape their portraits at the studio. Like, all the major Disney heroes, princesses, sidekicks, and even some of the villains, they escape their frames and they get together outside for a big-ass group photo. Things initially go wrong because Goofy's bumbling destroys the camera and everyone's dejected and is about to return home and say, oh, maybe in another 100 years. But then the musicians among the characters strike up a rendition of When You Wish Upon a Star, and almost everyone in the crowd joins in. Fix It Felix fixes the camera and the group photo proceeds as planned. The end.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything, like, in terms of like what little story there is here?
No, I think it's less. Well, they do escape their portraits, but it's only when, like, the humans leave. So it's sort of like a night at the museum-y kind of thing, where, like, oh, the like animated animals come to life. It's like yearbook photo day, kind of. Mm-hmm. That's how I interpret it as. It was cute. It was very short, though, actually. I was surprised how short it was. I saw it was only 15 minutes, but then more than half of that was credits. So I think, actually, yeah, the short was only, like, 6 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And it featured the longest employee at Disney, Burnett Mattinson,
mm-hmm,
which was really cute. I was wondering who that old man was. And there are two little Easter. I mean, the whole thing is Easter eggs.
It's a big minefield of Easter eggs.
Yeah, the two that really stood out to me are Dalmatians watching Fantasia 2000 was cute.
It was the original.
Oh, the original?
Yeah, they were watching the Nambolt down sequence, and Kristoff is passing and said, okay, Dalmatians, let's go. You're getting nightmares. And
yeah,
then he pops out of the screen, and they're like, ah.
Yeah. Sorry. They're watching Fantasia. And then, I don't know if you noticed this, but when Mickey is approaching the picture of Walt,
mm-hmm,
the Tuppence a Bag.
Yeah, Feed the Birds.
Song is playing. Yeah, the mm-hmm that music is playing. That was my only two big takeaways. Honestly, I thought it was cute. It was fun. I don't really understand its purpose other than, like, self-congratulatory. Like, oh my god, look how amazing we are, guys. I actually was gifted that photo that they took.
Oh.
As a Disney employee, but for some reason I threw it away. I don't know why. I feel dumb now. I kept it. I know. Huh. Little dumb bitch of me. But no, I thought it was cute. I was surprised how much of the original casts came back to narrate.
Well, I think they did use archival footage, and for Robin Williams, the genie, he recorded a whole bunch of stuff for Aladdin that ended up not being used. So they just used some stuff from that. But they did bring some original people back. I think like the original, like Ariel's original voice and
Quasimodo's original voice.
Oh yeah, that was a surprise. Yeah.
Timon. I mean, like, yeah, Leo Salonga, and the guy who originally played Aladdin too, Scott Winger. Overall, like, I thought it was cute. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, the best part of it was that so much of the original cast from the older movies came back. Like, I knew that, like, you know, Kelly Tran and like,
Ellie Corbaia.
What's her name? Ariana DeBose would come back. Mm-hmm. But like the other people, I'm like, oh wow, you came back. Mm-hmm. Which is great.
So I think I liked it more than you did. I think this is how you celebrate 100 years of Disney animation rather than Wish. This is it done right. Short and sweet and like not a full movie. Just like, and I think it has something for everybody. I remember like, I mentioned it to Pandy, and he appreciated that actually the Robin Hood characters had a surprising amount of screen time. Pulling the curtain back, we do this thing at Christmas where our parents, Emma and I, we have a movie that we each have everyone watch, and my pick this year was the 1938 Robin Hood film with Errol Flynn, and I don't think he was in the Errol Flynn version, but in Robin Hood lore, there's a character, a troubadour among the merry men called Allan a Dale, and in the Disney one, he's an animated rooster. And he's actually the one who strikes up When You Wish Upon a Star in this. He's the one who, like, sort of turns the tide.
So I think you probably had more fun with it, because honestly, while watching it, I could recognize maybe half the characters. Maybe more than half, two-thirds. But there were some where I'm like, I think you're from this thing, but I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But since you have gone through this journey of rewatching all of them, I feel like you can be like, oh, it's from that thing, it's from that thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas half of them was like, shit, I don't know any Disney movies.
Well, some of them actually aren't from any of the movies that we covered, or they're from like other animated Disney things. But even
Tiana, like I haven't seen that movie in ages. So I was like, oh, that's Tiana. But I'm sure you're like, oh, like that's, you know, like you have a better frame of reference where I'm like vaguely like, oh, that's the person from the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Which maybe means I should just watch more Disney movies, but
we'll get to that in a bit. But I have two favorite moments involving like some of the character interaction. So one of them was Hans literally being frozen out of the whole thing by Elsa.
That was cute. Yeah, I liked that. Yeah.
And it's totally in character. And actually one of my favorite parts of Frozen 2 is when Elsa's like seeing all these sort of snow memories and she sees like an image of Hans. She just immediately destroys it because she hates his guts.
Yeah. No, I love that their hate has lasted.
Yeah,
I mean, because he did fuck them over, so like, It's justified hate.
Yeah. It would be like if Jasmine like saw a sort of sand image of Jafar, she would like kick it down.
Yeah.
But my all-time favorite, it actually involved so Ka the snake from the Jungle Book. He ends up hypnotizing a lesser character called Clarabelle Cow. Like, in addition to Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Goofy, there are a bunch of like other barnyard animal characters that never really like endured the way that they did. So, but he's hypnotizing this cow, and Mickey says, "Is like and Rapunzel says, "I'll take care of this," and she follows Ka and off screen whacks him with her frying pan. You just see like Ka's body stiffen.
Yeah, actually, I think the highlight for me was the Disney princesses, because one of my favorite was when Moana is dropped in by like the water, and then she's holding Flounder, and she's like, "Oh God, help!" And I was like, okay, that's kind of cute. Like, they're both from that world, so it makes sense that she sort of dropped in there, and then she's, like, with the other, you know, water person. That was actually, that was sort of fun.
Actually, getting to the voice cast, one person they recast, and it totally makes sense, is the Mad Hatter, because he was voiced by Ed Wynn, who's, well, Alice in Wonderland is from the 50s, and he was also, I don't know if you remember, in Mary Poppins, Uncle Albert.
I don't. I haven't seen Mary Poppins in ages.
Yeah. He has, like, a very distinct voice, but he's actually voiced by Alan Tudyk, and the reason that he did that is because Alan Tudyk basically does a very similar voice to him in Wreck-It Ralph, because he voices the main villain in the first Wreck-It Ralph film, The Candy King.
Okay.
So it makes sense for him, to voice the Mad Hatter for this.
Okay, also, while we're talking about Alan Tudyk, I think we discussed this on Wish, but Alan Tudyk has done enough, okay? Let's retire him. Let's put him in a vault. He, I'm sure, has made tons of money.
We should also mention, he played both the pig and the rooster in Moana 2.
Yeah, and I saw that he played two things in this, and I was like, okay, we love him, obviously, but let's move on. Let's get someone else. That's my hot take. I mean, listen, I love Alan Tudyk. I just feel like let's spread the wealth, okay? Let's do something else.
I wonder how you'd... I probably won't do this project at least anytime soon, but I wonder how you would feel about John Ratzenberger if we ever did, like, a Pixar version of this.
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, cast some new people. Like, use this as an opportunity to, like, develop more talent. Like, mm-hmm. It's just... I don't know. That's my pet peeve. But, mm-hmm. The one part I felt like I was like, really, was when like everyone gives up after the camera's broken. I'm like, this is fucking Disney. Okay, no one gives up in Disney.
that is a little absurd. Like, considering there are all these magical characters there that could fix it very easily.
Yeah, no one would turn their back and be like, no. Like, everyone would be like, okay, look, guys, let's do it. Like, we can fix it. I know they needed sort of that down moment to like rebuild it, but yeah. To me, I was like, okay, this was cute, but I don't need to see another one for another 100 years.
I will say I did have one negative, and it's at the very beginning, but it is softened by knowing that the old man was Bernie Madison, because at the very beginning you have him and the sort of young intern like saying like sort of reflecting on Disney's legacy and stuff like that, and it's very clunky. But the fact that it's actually Bernie Madison, who worked for the company for 60 years.
I know. No, I thought it was very corny. It seemed like a company HR video that's like, if these walls could talk, huh?
Yeah, that's very bad, but it gets better from there, thankfully.
Yeah, I agree.
What was this? Oh, when we should say he, I looked through his career, the main thing, obviously he's probably in a lot of stuff over that period, but he co-directed The Great Mouse Detective.
Okay, cool.
Actually, along with John Musker and Ron Clements, who were on the first Moana film, and as well as Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Hercules and a bunch of others.
Okay,
but
yeah,
that was one of his contributions. I'm sure there's a lot more, and I also like the little nod they did to Disney himself. They didn't linger on too long, and it was appropriate that Mickey Mouse is the one who gives it out to it, because that's his most famous creation, as well as basically the alter ego of Disney. I believe you know this already. Disney is the original person who voiced him, and I think to this day is the current guy who voices it is fine, but Mickey Mouse doesn't sound right to me unless Walt is voicing him.
Yeah, I always forget that Chris Deonopoulos or whatever voices
Deonopoulos, I think.
Yeah, because he's in The Office as like Brian, who like Pam. He's in the final season. That's in love with Pam, and he's also in Arrested Development. So like, I'm just like, oh, you're like I don't see you as like a voice person, but it's fun to remember that.
So, well, actually, funny you should say, because kind of from the reverse. You know Beck Bennett.
Yeah.
The main thing I know him from is the DuckTales cartoon, the reboot one, and he's going to be in the upcoming Superman film, one of the Daily Planet staff.
I saw he was in the upcoming Superman film. I love him. He's so funny.
Yeah. He's really funny at DuckTales. There's a scene where he and a character voiced by Jason Mantzoukas have a dumbass off.
Okay, I believe that. There is a really funny SNL skit with him, which is like a game show, and it's called like why is Benedict Cumberbatch hot? But Benedict Cumberbatch is one of the contestants. And Beck Bennett is, like, showing pictures of him compared to Benedict Cumberbatch. She's like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm hotter. Like, anyway, it's really funny. If you ever. I sometimes watch a lot of SNL clips when I'm first waking up. So that's it's a good one.
So is there anything else to say about Once Upon a Studio? I mean, I'm not going to – I didn't give a grade. And it's a short film, so I don't know if it's really worth it, but –
No, I didn't give it a grade either. It sort of felt like a propaganda film, but I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. You know,
and again, coming off of Wish, it was definitely a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
So, this is kind of weird to say, but and I can't really do a whole like retrospective of this because without like, I feel like I would need to get like everybody I collaborated with this on board, but Emma, you've now seen most of the animated Disney canon. I think you've been on more episodes than anybody else. I'd have to do a count to be sure. But
I have been on 21.
Oh, out of... so, and this is the 60th episode. So do I have it by the films or by episodes? Because I remember we did the package films, we did two at a time.
Oh, I think I have it by the films. By the films. Okay.
So, yeah, so... there have been 63 films and 60 episodes, so 21. So you've been on nearly one third of all the episodes.
Yeah.
But 30% exactly, 18 out of 60. So I have some questions for you. So as an aspiring filmmaker and as somebody who's now seen most, if not all, of the animated Disney films, has your perception of these films changed at all over the past few years and now as an adult, like back from when we reviewed Snow White 3 years ago?
Well, yeah, when was Snow White? When did we review it? 2021?
Late 2021.
Okay, so I had just started grad school, is that right? Yes, I think that is right. I feel like my first class in grad school was a script writing class, and they showed this video. This story has a point, I swear. Mm-hmm. It showed this video about sort of like how to create a plot, and it was using like sort of Disney formula. And I feel like once you know that formula, you see it everywhere. So I do feel like the Disney movies are very formulaic, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think you know what to expect. And it's also then you can appreciate the ones that do something with that formula, you know, give it a little bit oomph or like give it some edge or twist the, you know, like sort of like the Hans, you know, reveal thing. Mm-hmm. Hans reveal? It's Hans, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's been interesting. I think it's been fun to rewatch some of these movies. I'm looking back on this spreadsheet you sent me of like the ratings I gave these movies. And thinking back, I'm like, wow, I rated way too high on the original ones.
Really?
Like, yeah. Like, I gave Snow White a 4? No. Like,
go ahead.
No, I see where I came from because I know it's very, like, significant but mm-hmm. in history. But, like, Bambi a 4? No, I was too nice. That's a no. Same with Lady in the Tramp. I don't know. Some of these movies are not... I think I was too nice.
Okay.
Definitely as we got later, I was like, then the scores make sense. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What else did I give a 5? Moana, I gave a 5. Lilo and Stitch, I gave a 4.5. I don't know. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Getting to your point, which ones do you think, of the ones you saw or just from memory, which ones do you think subverted or like use the formula to their advantage?
Okay. I liked it's hard to separate, like, because if you're like, what's your favorite movie of the list, I'd say Mulan. Mm-hmm. But that's not that wasn't affected by this podcast. I felt like Lilo and Stitch was one that surprised me because I avoided it for so long. Mm-hmm. And then when I watched it, I was like, well, shit, this is good. Mm-hmm. I feel like Fantasia 2000, I think I grew up with it, so it was good to see it as an adult. Honestly, for me, it was fun to just rewatch some of these as an adult and be like, oh, okay. Like 101 Dalmatians I hadn't seen in ages. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest one that surprised me was Lilo and Stitch. I think that was, if there's one takeaway from this podcast, it's that I now get the hype between Lilo and Stitch, which before I did not. I didn't get it.
Cool. Yeah, that was definitely one of the bigger surprises for me. Definitely one that I had seen before, but didn't have a nostalgia for. So it was like sort of untested quantity. And I think it is helpful that like seeing these films, and this sort of ties to like what I said about the most recent films. It is helpful, like to with hindsight, to see some of the films that weren't as appreciated at the time. Like Lilo and Stitch, along with like Treasure Planet and Atlantis, are sort of considered part of the Dark Age. The Dark Age or the Second Dark Age, depending on who you ask. Like a period where the Renaissance is over, the studio is kind of struggling, they're trying new things, and it's helped that there's now like a generation of people who saw these films as kids and now have like a new appreciation of them. And now with hindsight that we can see these films afresh.
One that you think Lilo and Stitch surprised you the most?
It was one of the biggest pleasant surprises. I mean, go over an overall, or should we discuss like low lights before we get into that?
Let's do low lights and then let's do highlights.
From the ones that you cover with me, I definitely know your answer to this. What are your least favorites, or which ones did you not enjoy?
Okay, all the package films. Sorry. Bambi and Fox and the Hound as well. I'm just not fans of the ones where there's animal violence. That's just a personal preference. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Saludos Amigos, Three Caballeros, Make My Music, and Melody Time were just like a fucking yawn. Like, to me, are all four of them package films?
Yes.
Yeah. They just all blurred into one horrible, mildly racist mess.
I think they're more than mildly racist places. Remember the quote unquote painted Indians from Melody Time?
They range from mildly racist to overtly racist. I was trying to be positive, but I should have known that positivity is not the name of the game. those are a definite no for me. I don't feel any need to rewatch those unless someone is going to pay me. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to demand reparations?
I might. I might be like, so where's my back pay for covering these? But no, I don't. Those were. What about you? What was the most disappointing for you?
So, the package films I knew would be a trial to get through, and they definitely were. Even though they're on the short side. I think I might have said this at the time, they sort of, for me, they make Fantasia all the more special, because a lot of them are Fantasia done wrong and with less successful music overall. I mean, there are parts of them I enjoyed. I mean, I told you about the Peter and the Wolf part. We had it on VHS, so I enjoyed that part of Melody Time. I'm glad for completeness sake, most of them are on Disney Plus, but other than The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, I would say they're utterly skippable.
That's the one that I wasn't part of.
Yeah, the other one is Fun and Fancy Free, and that one's also mostly skippable.
Yeah.
I'd seen a repackaged version of that one, like with a cartoon and that has a better framing sequence. That one's better. It has a character called Ludwig von Dreyk, who's basically an Austrian duck. Very funny. That's definitely, in terms of like the eras, that's definitely my least favorite. Going through like the eras like very quickly, I think it started really strong with Snow White and Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, and Bambi. I mean, Bambi and Pinocchio are never really going to be my favorite Disney films, but like viewing them critically made them appreciate them more, and I could see why I think they deserve their classic status. But then there's the package films, and I don't want to revisit any of them other than Ichabod and Mr. Toad. It got better from there with the quote-unquote Silver Age of Disney in the 50s, you know, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, although Peter Pan was, as I like to say, it's more racist than you remember.
Yeah.
It has some good stuff in it, but the racism is more constant there than even Dumbo. And so that was a difficult one to assess properly. Then, like, in the 60s and, like, the late 50s, it was around the time that Walt was actually focusing more, and I think the company was also focusing more on, you know, Disneyland and, like, live-action stuff, and weren't as good. I mean, Walt is, well, I don't want to, like, obviously, there's a whole discussion about, like, the Walt's good points and bad points, and I say Walt just to distinguish him from the Disney company, but he was very hands-on with the earlier films, and he was less so with some of the later ones, and I think it showed, like with Sleeping Beauty. I mean, 100 Dalmatians is good, although the animation is, like, very dated and, like, isn't as polished because they were sort of, because they had big budget cuts after Sleeping Beauty because it was a very expensive flop. Jungle Book, well, obviously is a sentimental favorite, and it was one that Disney was actually more involved with, and it's, along with Mary Poppins, it's one that the Sherman Brothers were deeply involved in. So it has some great songs. Then it's Ropey after that, you know, Aristocats, Robin Hood. Winnie the Pooh was, it's kind of weird because part of it was made in the 60s and part of it is afterwards, so it's a little mixed, but overall good. And that it's not surprising to me that people like Winnie the Pooh more than Mickey Mouse on the whole. I don't know about you.
You know how I feel about Mickey Mouse. Well, no, you know how I feel about Donald Duck. He's
That was also a surprise learning that you hated him.
He's just so, his voice is like nails on a chalkboard. I can't. But you know what? Lily loves him, so I guess I will tolerate him for her.
Rescuers, okay. Fox and Hound, I think maybe that one I overgrade. I think that one was dark. Was one as a child I didn't really enjoy because it was too dark. But now seeing it as an adult, I don't feel it was dark enough. So it's sort of, because it was one with a very conflicted like production history. So it feels like they were trying to please like more than one party, but please nobody. Black Cauldron. Well, I'm not going to go through all the films like individually. Yeah, but Black Cauldron. That one's,
especially since I haven't seen all of them, so I just, there's no context for me when you're like, oh, it's
okay. I'll stop rolling up names and just go there. So Disney Renaissance, obviously this is not this is as good, if not better, than I remembered, other than Pocahontas and maybe to some extent Hercules, all, and those are all very good and rewatchable films, and I don't think we're ever going to see an era of Disney as consistently as good as that ever again.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Not in our lifetimes, at least. Then it's a little more ropey. I went over like Lilo and Stitch and some of the other ones that were more some hits and misses. Then in the CGI era, started pretty bad with Chicken Little, but I think by the time we got to Tangled, it hit its stride at last. And again, it's less than 10 years ago, so it's a little harder to assess like Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, and Zootopia, but we know at least one genuine classic in the form of Moana. And I think, even though it's more recent, I think Encanto is very good also.
I know you hate to say it, but I do think Frozen will be a classic in our lifetime. I know you don't like it. I think some of that is unfairly biased. I have that same bias with Lilo and Stitch, where it was so overexposed to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck. Hell, never show this to me again. But I do think that one is one that is going to always come back, especially because of the Let It Go, unfortunately, like for you. And you're just have to be okay with that. You're gonna have to, just like I have to,
maybe, or it could fall, it might also fall from fashion. I'm not saying I wish it to, but that's just, this is an extreme example. But think about the sort of how much Gone with the Wind has declined in terms of like public image and popularity.
Yeah, but that's because it's racist, and because
that's true. It's an unfair comparison. But think about like westerns or like pre-Gladiator, like Roman films, things that are like really popular long ago, which are now like sort of forgotten.
Yeah, but westerns always have a place in like, oh man, he's like a cool western. You know what I mean? Like, they'll always have their place in history, even when people think about, like, dated.
Okay. Maybe, it'll probably still always have an audience and always have its lovers, and I can't take it away from them, and they're nowhere near as bad as I thought they would be. But
the influence of modern films, I feel like Encanto, Frozen are the big ones.
And the original Moana?
I don't know if it had quite the influence that we think it did. I mean, I think it's amazing.
Well, along with Hamilton, it sort of like made Lin-Manuel Miranda like super famous and popular.
Yeah, it was, but it was in of that era where like he was doing everything. So I think it was just one of the things. I don't know. I think he would have been popular without Moana.
Didn't you point out it was like the most streamed film of all time?
Actually, I did. Yeah, I think.
It's less than 10 years old, but I think it's earned its place, even if it wasn't getting a sequel and an unnecessarily remake. But I will say, in terms of low lights and fairly recent ones, you haven't re-seen it, Emma, but Raya and the Last Dragon really is not that good once you know more about how it was made.
Yeah, I saw with you the one and only time, and I thought it was fine. Mm-hmm. But again, I only saw it once. If I saw it again, I'd probably be like, not great.
Yeah, it's
obviously Wish was not good.
Yeah, that was. I think maybe if I had seen it with some more distance, maybe I would have given it a one or a two. But I think it's gonna be forgotten or like only remembered as just a low point for the company.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think it's not like overtly horrible. It's just very blah. I'm sure people in the industry will be like, wow, what a failure. But I don't think people in the world are going to be like, man, remember that movie Wish? They're going to be like, man, remember that movie? I don't know. It's, Joker 2, Folie à Deux. You know what I mean? I think it's like...
Oh, wow, that's damning.
Yeah.
That's going to be... I mean, I haven't seen either of the Joker films, and I don't think I'd enjoy them on principle, but that's all a discussion for another day.
I don't know. I don't think people will look back and be like, man, what a horrible movie. I think they'll just be like, oh, that happened. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I guess, here's a question before we get into, like, discussion in the future. Are there any films that we didn't review together that you're curious about revisiting, or conversely, ones that you don't see yourself revisiting?
Okay. In terms of rewatch, the ones, like, I don't know if I would cover them on a podcast again, because I'm a little bit podcasted out. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going through the list. I love Atlantis. I've seen it a bunch. Mm-hmm. It's really creepy to me because I have a fear of deep water, but mm-hmm. I think it's like very different for Disney. It's mm-hmm. more like I felt like it was more like a Hayao Miyazaki movie than Disney. Mm-hmm. I put it in the realm of like Castle in the Sky. Peter, a lot of these movies like Pinocchio, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, I haven't seen them in so long. I feel like they'd either be a disappointment or they'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Aladdin, I haven't seen in so long. I would like to see that again. Hunchback of Notre Dame, I've seen a lot. And I still love it. Hercules and Tarzan, great ones. Tarzan, the music is just top notch. I mean, I think there are a lot of these that, like, if it was like a sleepy Sunday afternoon, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'd watch A Little Mermaid, or like, I'd watch, you know, The Lion King. But none of them, I'm like, I think the ones I picked to co-host with you are the ones that I feel the most passionate about. Mainly Mulan, Oliver and Company, Moana, Tangled, maybe.
Cool. So, do you have any hopes or like thoughts about the future? Like, sort of, like now that we've like covered, we've covered a good chunk of them, and now like seeing this, the success of Moana 2, financially at least.
Yeah. The future of Disney or the future of you as a podcaster?
No. Like Disney animation.
I think they need to get back to that. They're in this space right now of playing it too safe, which I get, mm-hmm. because animated movies are really expensive to make. I would like to see some more avant-garde stuff. Maybe that will be in the form of TV series where it's not as reliant on box office. I don't know. I kind of hope this live action thing dies down because it's really annoying. But I don't think it will as long as it keeps making money. Mm-hmm. I will probably have to go see the live action Moana when it comes out. Mm-hmm. Just because I have no willpower. What about you?
So I'm kind of mixed. I'm glad that Moana 2 is more successful. I hope that the money made from it goes into more original projects. I mean, right now there is supposed to be a new original films, like animated film slated for 2026, like one that isn't a sequel, but there's no further details, and projects like that have been shelved before. Like, I don't know if you remember. You remember in Zootopia, there's a scene where getting back to Alan Tudyk, the weasel, he's selling these sort of bootleg, not Disney DVDs.
Yeah.
And one of them is called Giraffic, which is a reference to Gigantic, which was a Disney project that actually never came into fruition and would have involved giants.
Okay.
I think there's a whole like Wikipedia article about like scrapped Disney film. But I do think that probably what they should have done for Wish is, and they've done this before, when in doubt, go back to the fairy tales, go back to princesses. Like during the time of the package films when they were looking for a film to bring the studio back, they went with Cinderella. And like leading up to the Disney Renaissance, what they went with Little Mermaid, a princess. And when they're getting momentum, they eventually like went back to Princess and the Frog, Rapunzel, and the Snow Queen for their respective films. I think there's a lot of fairy tales and folklores that, I mean, Moana is in part based on like South Pacific mythology. In order to find new stories, I do think there's some old ones that they would do well to look at and find something new, a new way to tell those stories.
I'd like to see sort of a Moana-esque where it's based on like folklore, but based in Africa somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we heard a lot of those stories growing up in like school, like the,
Have a film about Anansi.
Anansi? No.
No. Anansi.
Yes. Yeah. The spider.
Yes, the original black Spider-Man.
Yeah, I thought you said a Nazi. I'm like,
no, Christian, a Nazi. I could be mispronouncing it.
Yeah, I'm like, no, not Nazis. That is the wrong direction for kids' movies, Christian.
No.
Yeah. No, something like that. Something, I feel like that is sort of an untapped. I'd like to see more of like a, South American,
mm-hmm.
you know, princess.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Encanto, and Encanto's very good, but I'm sure there are like other tales or other cultures you could
make
a good story from.
Mayan princess or something.
Yeah.
Princess.
I mean, realistically, they can't all be Moana and Encanto, but I'd like to see them try new things, and maybe we'll get an era that's like the early 2000s where we get The Emperor's New Groove and Atlantis and Lilo and Stitch and Treasure Planet. Like, not all of them are masterpieces, but they're all worth watching and they're doing different things. But if they're just going to churn out sequels, and I'm kind of glad that I'm taking a break from them now. If they're just doing sequels, and there's probably going to be a longer break before I get to, there's Zootopia 2 and Frozen 3 and Moana 3 when they come out.
Isn't there going to be a movie called like Elio or something, or is that not?
That is Pixar.
That's Pixar. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And I guess that's another something of a shortcut, even though Moana and Encanto are the exception to this. The 3D animated, the digitally animated, I guess it's called 3D animated, Disney films, the non-Pixar ones. I feel like maybe it's because they're so young, but they don't quite have as much of an identity as Pixar films. I think on the whole, like post-Disney Renaissance, it's been a story of, like, the studios have definitely been struggling to compete, not only with Pixar themselves, like, who have always been joined to the hip Disney, but also DreamWorks and, like, other animated films. And to some extent, I think they've, like, caught up now, but I think, other than like having songs and like sort of traditional Disney ones, I feel like they don't have as strong a voice, and it's kind of unfair because they're only they're less than 20 years old. But
I think that's also maybe because we're of an older generation. I think kids now, like, the influence that, like, Frozen had on the people who are, I don't know, 15 years younger than us, 20 years younger than us, is, like, how, like, our cousin was obsessed with Frozen. You know what I mean? Like, I think they'll be like, oh, my God, it was so culturally important. But we're like, well, The Lion King was culturally important. Mulan was culturally important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit because
maybe, maybe it's presumptuous. And again, I'm glad that I'm taking a break now. I think maybe I might even take, like, a long break before getting to, the like, a film. So I've had more, like, more time to reflect on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, maybe 5 or even 10 years if Earth 2 is still going then. Because I have other other projects, both on and off Earth 2, but which I might bring up later. But
it's optimistic that you think we as a society will be alive in 10 years. I think we will have bombed each other and I'll be dead.
Well, I will say that's what they said 2005 and in 2017.
And
that's all I have to paraphrase Forrest Gump. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. And Christian, I want to thank you for hosting this podcast. It's been a labor of love for you. And I think, you know, I definitely would not have been able to make it to the end, especially trudging through, like, the package films. I would have been like, okay, well, maybe I just skip the ones I don't like. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, skip the ones that are below 60% on Rotten Tomatoes for my sanity. But you didn't. You persevered. And now you made it to the end for now. Mm-hmm. And congratulations. Applause. Question.
Right then, we reached out to people for feedback for our last episode and extended the deadline, and you folks did not disappoint. We're going to start with an email from Lauren, who I did Frozen 2 with, and Emma Stead. So, Emma, do you want to read this message?
Sure, I am ready. Okay, thank you, Lauren, for sending in. Here is your message. When I think about the span of movies that Part of Your World has covered, I can't help but look at it through the role of women in animated movies has changed, and how I'm getting there. Sorry, Lauren. And I hope that Moana 2 continues it.
Pulling the curtain back, Emma's reading these off of the fly, whereas I had time to read over them beforehand.
Yeah. Starting with Snow White and continuing on, we see how the messages towards women evolve. First bullet point, be kind and passively have faith even when the world around isn't and doesn't. And you will be rewarded with a happy ending and a handsome prince. That's from Snow White and Cinderella. Okay. Next bullet. Prove your kindness even in the face of people who will try to manipulate you and take it away. And you will have proven your worth and be deserving of a handsome prince. That's The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. Next bullet. Take action against your defined role and seek your own path. But still, be rewarded for your action with a handsome prince. That's Aladdin and Mulan. Next bullet, take care about what's important to you and take action for yourself. And if a love interest happens to come by, awesome. That's Frozen. And the last bullet, take action for yourself and what's important to you, full stop. Merida and Moana.
Merida, we should say, is the protagonist.
Is Brave, yes.
Which we didn't cover, but is a Pixar film. So if ever did a Pixar podcast, then it would be covered.
Yeah, but it is still in the animated. And it is, I get what she's saying. It is part of the anime. As for now, as far as I know, Moana doesn't have a love interest in Moana 2. And I'm happy to see that they didn't take the easy route and give her one to complete her story. Now for our fearless host, may your next adventure bring you to places you've never imagined.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you very much. Emma, do you have any immediate responses to her points or about, like, the changing role or expectations of, like, female protagonists or the princesses?
No, I love it. I think Mulan did a good... Mulan and Pocahontas is also not mentioned, which is a very female-centric. Granted, I have not seen Aladdin in a really long time, but I don't remember it being that female-centric.
Well, I will say... Oh, go ahead.
I sort of remember that she's sort of like a side character, whereas for Mulan and Pocahontas, I would argue that they are the leads, and they're more like, I'm gonna save the fucking day, but if I happen to catch a prince on the way, like, all right, come along, boy toy. Well, in Pocahontas it's more she does it for him, but in Mulan especially, I think this just proves my point that Mulan was ahead of its time. I mean, fucking A.
Yeah, I do think I will say I think Frozen, Aladdin, and Mulan are I think are maybe I'm misreading it, or maybe this is just me like not understanding feminism. I feel like they're kind of similar in that the females they don't the main female characters they don't need a man or don't feel a need for Jasmine. I remember even saying if I do choose to marry, I want it to be for love. And she says at one point like when. Quote unquote, Prince Ali, Jafar, and Sultan are arguing about what to do. She says, "I am not a prize to be won." So she actually is stronger than you might remember.
Yeah, but I think it's less strong and more rebellion to her circumstances.
Right.
I think Mulan was actually, I mean, it's like there's like
Agreed.
rebellion, there's like Mulan goes out of her way to protect her family. And I mean, again, I apologize, I haven't seen Aladdin in probably 15 years, but I really don't remember that much of that.
She does like try to escape her basically cage early on, you know,
Yeah.
disguising as the street mouse.
And
But
Pocahontas is at least partially motivated by a man. So that's not great. But yeah.
I think all her points are very good. I do think that, and definitely there is a double standard that to like how female characters are expected to be versus male characters who are allowed to be more rebellious. Although the way you Pinocchio, one of the messages of it is that even though the world is horrible, you're going to be better off if you be good. Because Pinocchio is said, if you're truthful, unselfish, and brave, then you'll become a real boy. So he's kind of like in the princess role,
It
even though
does
like.
have, I don't have the facts to match this up. I'm just thinking about the timeline. It does seem like as feminism has grown, the princess movies have died down. So we actually have, like, it seems like for a while there was a lot of female-led movies, but they weren't portrayed very well, and now it's less female-led movies, but they're portrayed better. And like, I guess it's a better balance, but it does feel weird that I mean, in the 90s, how many princess movies were there?
Well, okay, so but I mean, so Little Mermaid is 89, so it's kind of doesn't count. But I think the definition of a Disney princess has changed, and it has become so. Yeah, they've become more liberated and less sort of like a helpless princess. So like Ariel is a much stronger character than Cinderella, Snow White, or especially Sleeping Beauty. And Belle is even more independent. She marries into royalty. She's not born a princess. And, Jasmine, she is a princess, but she like doesn't like being one, and she like wants to marry for love. And I'm skipping Nala because she's not. She marries into royalty. And she's a lioness.
There's female-led movies now that aren't princess, like Encanto.
True. Like the last real princess I think we had is Elsa and Anna. I mean, they're still very popular though.
Yeah, and I guess Moana is technically a chiefess, but she's not like a princess. But yeah, anyway, that was a really good note. Thank you, Lauren, for sending in. I think you crushed it, and yeah, I'm excited to hear more feedback.
All right, so next we got another email, this time from Donovan Morgan Grant. So here we go. I'll read this one. So, hello, Christian and Emma. So here we are after 2.5 years. You have run the gamut of the original Disney theatrical animation. Between the decades, the guest host, himself included, the songs and the cringing, you have amassed a far grander understanding of the Disney universe and its production than many of us can say. And I thank you, Emma, and everyone else who have come along to help guide listeners through childhood memories and introspective analysis. Oh, thank you. With all that being said, instead of a broad question for your post-Wish episode, I thought I'd hit you up with several that have come across my mind whenever listening to the show. If you've already answered these questions throughout the course of the episode, feel free to ignore. I don't think we have, and even though it's addressed to me, Emma, why don't we both answer them? So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, question one. From the early days of Disney to the Renaissance of the late 80s and 90s to Dinosaur to the 3D animated films of the past 20 years, has there been anything of genuine value inherent to Disney that you feel was lost over time or that you feel has always managed to stay intact that's unique to the company?
Huh.
So is it. So
Why
just.
don't you go first?
Okay, so in terms of something lost. Well, I mean, an obvious thing is 2D animation, but that's just
the
way that the wind is blowing then for animation anyway. And I don't know if it, I don't think it's likely to come back in full. That's just a time thing. I can't think of anything else offhand. I mean, the sort of Disney villain advanced for a while, but between Magnifico and the sort of antagonist of Moana 2 might be making a comeback. I hope he's making a comeback. And songs have sort of come in and out of fashion. Like, I'm trying to think of Disney, like Great Mouse Detect. Well, that has some songs. But like the sort of musical format has sort of gone in and out of fashion. Oh, better example is, in the 2000s, like post Tarzan, you know, with Atlantis, Lilo and Stitch and Treasure Planet. They didn't have like the musical numbers.
Yeah.
And then those came back with Tangled and Princess and the Frog and Frozen and Moana.
So if I'm understanding the question right, it's like what hasn't sustained and what has sustained, right?
I think the main thing that I think has sustained, although this is not necessarily unique to Disney films, at least not anymore, is just the fundamental optimism, you know, like the happy ending that if you're good and you, and like, just the form of like overcoming evil and challenges and having like a happy ending, a la fairy tale.
Yeah, I think what sustains is, and you, Christian, you sort of said it, is the music. I feel like now, especially, we are getting into a world where people will know the song but not know the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I think that peaked with, like, the We Don't Talk About Bruno. No one, maybe people didn't know it's from Encanto. Honestly, sometimes I forget the movie that it's from. Mm. But I forget the name. I'm like, oh, it's from that movie with Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know? But I think that in 100 years, what people are going to remember is not necessarily the movies, but the music.
That's a good point. That is definitely something that makes Disney special. And even though, like, Pixar has, like, you know, Randy Newman, even though DreamWorks has some of its songs, that's something that Disney is always going to have in its favor and is one of its greatest strengths.
I think it's a huge asset. I think people, like, When You Wish Upon a Star, I feel nothing for... Is it Snow White? No. What is it?
It's from Pinocchio.
Pinocchio. I have not seen Pinocchio in years. I don't like it because it scares me about the ocean, but fuck it. When I hear When You Wish Upon a Star, that shit will always stick with me. You know, it's just the music. Anyway, Lost, I'm not sure. I think maybe like the traditional the traditional technique of animation is maybe a little bit lost, but I associate that more with like the changing of the times and not with Disney specifically. What's the next question?
So this actually ties into Pinocchio. Number two, when we discussed Pinocchio, which is the first episode I collaborated with him on, I believe he posited that maybe Disney's darkest film. Again, you'd have to rewatch this to be sure. So he asked, at the end of all your reviews, has that opinion changed? So here's the question I'm going to remember, because this gets to my answer. What do you remember as being darker, Pinocchio or Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Hunchback of Notre Dame, but I'm very biased because I haven't seen a lot of these movies, and I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen Pinocchio fully. I've definitely seen parts of it as like a 7-year-old, but not fully. I just don't like it because he gets swallowed by a whale, doesn't he? And I'm afraid of water. But honestly, I don't remember it that well. Hunchback of Notre Dame is a super dark one. Honestly, like, Pocahontas is really dark too.
In places, yes.
It is, yeah, not overall. I think in a lot of the movies, there's really, really dark elements.
Lion King also, and
like, yeah,
and
I mean, fucking
and Mike Mulan, like, you know, the dead bat, like the dead soldiers.
Tangled is about a kidnapped child is taken
and,
as her.
And hell, even going back to Cinderella.
Yeah.
And like, but Snow White and like the witch's like transformation and like some of her scenes.
No, but if you think about the plot of Tangled, it literally starts with a kidnapping of a baby.
Go ahead.
No. So yeah, I think probably Pinocchio, if I remember it right, and Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I do remember really, really well.
Okay, I think it boils down to those two, and I would have to I haven't rewatched Pinocchio since we covered it again, but from memory, Pinocchio actually starts out really light, you know, with when you wish upon a star, you like see like the toy shop, you get to meet like Geppetto, you see like the blue fairy and like the Figaro and stuff like that. It's like really cute, but then like it gets darker like once, you know, Pinocchio is like ends up being enslaved by Stromboli, and then we meet the highwaymen, and like the kids turn to donkeys, and then like has to go out to sea. Then it becomes dark from there. So it's like the first act is really bright, and acts two and three from memory are darker than the rest of the movie. Hunchback, kind of kind of tangled. It like the first scene with this. Well, after, apart from the narration, the first scene is Frollo killing a woman and trying to kill a baby. Since he's such, I mean, there's things in it that lighten it. I mean, for the worse, like gargoyles and like some humor, like the things like the Feast of Fools and color and stuff like that. But since Frollo is such an R-rated character in a G-rated movie, since he has like such a powerful presence throughout the film, I think it would have to go to Hunchback.
Even like the Festival of Fools or whatever is fucking dark. I mean, it's basically like, if I remember right, again, haven't seen it in years. I should watch that. Don't they throw tomatoes at him and shit?
Yeah, like it ends with him being like tortured, like on and like humiliated in public, and Frollo just letting it happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a public stoning. That's fucking dark. Yeah.
And the way they do it when they're throwing tomatoes, he's like covered. He's covered in red, so you're made to think of him being like covered in blood.
Yeah, jeez. Okay.
So I'd have to rewatch Pinocchio, but I think Hunchback wins.
Yeah, I do. Okay. Next question is more positive.
Okay. Well, no, it isn't. So, three. Similarly with Peter Pan, have there been any moments or examples that have sunk to the depths of offense and moral outrage more so than what made the Red Man Red song? Emma, feel free to say no. Do you want to do a live reaction to What Made the Red Man Red?
What is that?
It's from Peter Pan.
Oh, I already know it's going to be.
We don't have to. I'm just joking.
Yeah, I just the context and the lyrics from the title. That's not great. That's not great.
I think that is probably the worst, and the fact the racism of that is so constant. I think that makes it probably the worst in the films we covered. I mean, I think this isn't part of the Disney canon. It's not available for even like streaming. But Song of the South is probably worse, just because the whole conceit of, you know, like happy black people, like during in the Jim Crow South and like, you know, the tar baby and stuff like that.
I'm afraid to ask, but what is the context of this red song?
So in Neverland, there are Native Americans, or as they call them, Indians, and they're portrayed as like very cartoonish and like literally red rather than like a more like realistic skin tone.
Got it. Okay, so it's
like
not
big, big noses and like a lot like all the Indian stereotypes you can think of, and like Indian in quotes, I should say.
It's not sung by a villain, because when I was like, oh well, Savages from Pocahontas, but that's sung by someone who is
exactly and the thing is, the heroes are themselves being racist. Like, you know how like the heroes from, you know, the kids Peter Pan brings are like from sort of early 1900s London. One of them says like, oh, he refers to the Indians as savages, and like says, oh, the Indian is cunning but unintelligent. So it's the hero is being racist in this one, whereas in Pocahontas, for all its flaws, the main races are the villains.
Yeah. Okay.
Although, kind of getting to Pocahontas, so pulling the curtain back, Emma, what movie did you show us over Christmas?
Oh God. Okay. I showed a National Geographic documentary called Sugarcane.
It's very tell us what it's about, and then tell us where you can watch Sugarcane.
Yeah. Okay. So it's about the investigation of Catholic schools in Native Canadian communities in like the between the 40s and the 60s specifically. Mm-hmm. Are they called First Nations in Canada? In First Nations communities. Sorry. And it is really heart-wrenching to watch, but it's also about the repercussions of these schools and how it created a cycle of abuse and fear and trauma. Highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. It is on Disney Plus and Hulu. Also, I believe it is. I told my coworkers, I'm like, I made everyone watch Sugarcane on Christmas Eve. They're like, oh, wow, you're really bringing the Christmas spirit. But I think in the end, because it has, there's like a redemption arc for that family, it is maybe a happy ending at the end, but I, that's a really, really loose definition of it. It's just, it's a stunning movie. It's made by a first-time filmmaker. He's one of the co-directors, and he is like the lead character in the documentary, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And his father went to like one of those schools.
His grandmother went to one of the schools. His father was.
Oh, yeah. A baby born at one of those schools.
Abandoned, like left for dead mm-hmm. at one of those schools. So.
Yeah. But the reason I bring it up is because I remember thinking after that film, like, wow, Pocahontas is even worse now for like sugarcoating, like the relation, like the relationships between the whites and the natives.
Yeah.
Like giving that false impression. I mean, I do think that. I do think, yeah, what makes the red man red is still, like, the most racist single thing in the animated Disney canon, and just the portrayal of those characters in that film is the worst thing, even against things like the crows or, like, the black workers in the scene in Dumbo, or, like, the Siamese cats in Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah, I have tried to remove that from my brain. But you're just bringing it all up to the surface. So thanks for that, Chris. Reminding you that racism permeates through all walks of life, including children's stories.
Mm-hmm. I will say more so like in like pre-1970, although there's like a few questionable things here and there since then, but it's not, at least in my modern white, straight male eyes, there's fewer problematic things post-1970 than... For then,
yeah. Okay. Next question.
Do you want to get into lighter stuff?
Yes, please. Okay, what's the fourth question?
Number four, and this one we kind of went over. What is your biggest surprise in taking on this podcast endeavor?
Just how bad some of these movies are, and maybe that's because Christian made me do all the package films. But they churned out a lot of shit, and it's sort of funny because everyone's like, oh, like, Disney, like, they can do no wrong, you know? But, like, they did a lot of fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just, we don't remember that, and that is, I think, you know, in 30 years, we're not going to remember how shitty Wish was. Maybe Christian will, because Christian has a vendetta against it. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll remember Moana and Frozen, and Encanto, maybe, and not Wish, so... Yeah, just how much shit they shoveled through to get to the good stuff.
That is true. To enjoy the highs, you must endure the lows. Biggest surprise, I'm going to go in the opposite direction and say that and this kind of ties into the next questions for film, when you asked, were there any films better than you remember? The biggest example is Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah,
that's true. Most pleasant surprise. I think both of us, haven't seen all those films, but is that the one that surprised you the most?
I think I'd never seen it, but I was pretty annoyed by it, much like Christian and Frozen. Mm-hmm. It just was so overexposed to me. It took all the joy out of it. But I really enjoyed it. That was a really good one. There were a couple that just rewatching them as an adult, I was like, oh, shit, this is fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, right. I think Lilo and Stitch was the big one for me.
Okay, and any worse than you remembered?
Ugh. I think some of the, like, early ones, like, the ones that are considered classics, but they're just outdated now. I think, like, Snow White, Fox and the Hound, Bambi, those movies that, like, everyone's like, oh, they're the classics. And I'm like, well, they fucking suck. So, it's just because they're old, they're the classics.
Funny, because you were higher on Bambi than I was. I mean,
yeah.
I still kind of liked it, but... I felt like it didn't have much of a plot.
Yeah, in retrospect, I think I like it less. But okay. Sometimes you have to sit with movies for 2 years to really think about it. No, yeah, I think it's just these movies that are heralded as the classics being actually... I mean, I'm sure they were great for the time and they were, you know, huge advances, but they're just, in retrospect, not great. What about you?
So, worse I remembered, most of these films I had seen already and had some opinion of. I can't think of any off the top of my head that like I like had gone from really liking to really disliking. Like, I mean, when I was younger, I liked Pocahontas, but like as I grew older, like my enthusiasm a bit lessened, like knowing more about history. And by the time I rewatched this one, it had some good points, but also some bad, but mostly bad points for me. Let's see. Rescues Down Under is okay, and it's better than the original one, but I don't think it's necessarily... It's kind of forgotten in the Disney Renaissance for a reason. It's not, like, mind-blowing in retrospect. Like, obviously, the biggest surprise was Lilo and Stitch, and I will say, like, post-Disney Renaissance, I thought it would be a slog to finish, like, most of them, but some of the ones, like, 20 years old, like Lilo and Stitch and Atlantis and Treasure Planet, even though the latter two aren't perfect, they were better than I remembered. And I think sometimes it takes time to like better appreciate films.
Now that the podcast is almost over, can you admit that you kind of liked Frozen?
Yes.
Okay.
And I would rewatch either of them again.
Yes.
I might still have my reservations about them, but I'm no longer a Frozen phobe.
Kids, we did it. We did it. The podcast can end now. We successfully converted Christian to not hating.
I like Frozen. I don't love it. Maybe Frozen 3 will change my mind or help maybe just make me revert back to being a Frozen hater.
Yeah, no. I think I specifically didn't say a Frozen lover. I said Frozen not hater, because yes, that was not true just a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. You were firmly in the Frozen hate camp. Okay.
Okay. And the last major question, this is an interesting one, and one of the reasons I offered like to send you this one early, but anyway. 6. As many of the classic Disney films are based on classic tales of old, are there any that remain that Disney has yet to adapt that you'd be interested in seeing? Actually, before we answer that one, I need to grab something from the main room. Hang on a sec.
Okay,
Reply to my answer.
Okay. Are you still recording, or did you pause? I'm gonna take this as an opportunity to take over Christian's podcast. This is me. I'm stealing Christian's podcast. Welcome to the Emma File, where we talk about all things Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Do you want to answer this first, or should I?
You can answer this first. Okay, also,
so you know how Grandma and Grandpa had a bunch of hardcover books that we inherited?
Yes.
So one of the ones I inherited from them was a set of hardcover fairy tale books.
Okay.
I'm looking at the spine of them now. Some of them have actually been adapted. So, like, Beauty and the Beast and Sleeping Beauty. So, I'm just looking through these. So, Emperor's New Clothes, although there's Emperor's New... So, the one that stuck out to me that I was surprised that they haven't adapted in any way is Hansel and Gretel.
But that's just fucking dark for a kid's book.
Yeah, so I wonder, I mean, how do you do a full movie of that when you have the, like, what do they encounter in the forest other than the witch?
I don't know, huh?
I mean, there's some that I don't think they're ever going to do, like, Bluebeard is one. Do you know what Bluebeard's about?
No, what?
It's about a guy, he marries these women and kills them and, like, keeps their bodies, like, in his castle or something like that. He's, like, a serial bigamist, like a sort of... You know the term man-eater? He's basically a woman-eater.
Ew, okay.
Yeah. Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves. They mentioned it in Aladdin, and there's the 40 Thieves in the direct-to-video sequel. But, I mean, just looking at ones now, I've thought of... We mentioned earlier about stories they could adapt and how they could do something like something non-Western, like Anansi.
Yeah.
And I thought of another one earlier today, and that would be Hiawatha.
No, clarification, not a Nazi, like a Nazi person, like the African tales. And
yeah.
Because the way you said it sounds like a Disney princess movie about a Nazi. We don't want that.
Yeah, but we'll never that already. But
we do not want that.
I also thought earlier today, are there any Greek stories they could do? And I thought, oh, maybe Perseus. But then I thought, no, at the end of the day, the Perseus tale is about him cutting off a woman's head. You can't do that even with a villainous woman. But there's obviously countless fairy tales. But are there any fairy tales or stories that you think they could adapt into specifically good animated Disney films?
Not any specifically, although you sort of stole my thunder, because I was going to say a lot of, like, the Greek-Roman stories that you heard about, like, Athena and stuff like that. Like, if we could watch, like, if there's, like, a movie about, like, the creation of Athena and, like, her, like, sort of like a female Hercules, I'd be into that.
Hmm.
What country is Raya and the Last Dragon supposed to be? What culture?
All of Southeast Asia, and that's the problem.
Okay, that is a problem. This is a oxymoron. I would like to see a Disney version of Shogun. No, something about, like, feudal Japan, although that might be hitting it a little bit close to Mulan.
Okay.
And then I'd also like to see something about pirates. Like, I think that'd be, like, a girl who grows up on, like, a pirate ship or something. That's not, like, a tale. This is just, I'm pitching, Disney, if you're listening. But is that too close to Pirates of the Caribbean / maybe Moana / maybe, you know, who knows? But I feel like there are some things that I'm like, that would be fucking cool to do.
Yeah, it would be cool to do some more, like, non-European one, like, stories. Yeah. But getting to Ryan the Last Dragon, make sure the people behind it are actually from, the main people behind it are actually from that part of the world or have experience, like, are from that culture. Like,
it was like Moana did it pretty well.
Yeah, but Moana had a bunch of, they have something called the South Pacific Trust. They brought in, like, what's his name? Opetaia Fa'ui and a bunch of, like, other, like, South Pacific people in order, like, to get it right. Whereas they didn't do that with Ryan and the Last Dragon.
Yeah.
And the voice cast that one was primarily East Asian rather than Southeast Asian. So, another, like, I'm sure there's, like, a really cool Mexican tale they could do, or, like,
yeah,
or, like, some other parts of, like, Latin America or Brazil, or, and Japan is another place. I'm surprised they haven't done a story, like, based there yet.
Yeah, I think we're right about they should reach out and do more, like, African tales. That'd be really cool. We don't need another European princess. Like, we have it all. So let's just move on. Let's do something else. We have a couple French ones, right?
Yeah, we have German ones, you know, Rapunzel, Snow White, and Cinderella, depending on the version. Any other, like, tales or, like, parts of the world you think they could adopt stories from?
No, I don't think so.
They're definitely there. There are definitely lots of stories. It's just a matter of finding the right ones and finding the right way to adapt them.
And maybe, like,
a lot of them are kind of short.
Greenlandia, I don't know. Disney sort of does a little mishmash of cultures. I'm just trying to think, like, oh, an Icelandic princess would be cool, but they sort of stole the trolls and put them in Frozen.
And again, that's the issue with Ryan the Last Dragon. They tried to adopt all of Southeast Asia, even though it's, like, 11 countries, and they're, like, very they have some things in common, but of their own identities and traditions and are very different. It would be, like, adapting, like, making a princess story based on all the countries in the European Union. Okay, so at the end of Donovan's email, looking forward to seeing what comes next. Thanks for the many invites and the terrific show. Your pal, Donovan Morgan Grant. Thank you so much, Donovan, and thanks for joining me on this odyssey.
Thank you, Donovan, for these really thoughtful questions. This was a good thought piece for us.
Yeah, definitely some good ones there. So now we have four MP3s starting from the creator and head and sovereign of the site, Michael David Sims.
Hello, Christian and Emma, and everybody who has ever contributed to or listened to a part of your world. This is Michael David Sims, publisher of Earth2.net, and I really just wanted to say thank you to every single one of you for contributing to a part of your world for these last 60 episodes. 60 episodes. Thank you for devoting your time. Thank you for giving your voice, for giving your opinions. Just thank you for everything. Thank you for listening to this show. That really means a lot to me that you wanted to do this and you wanted to bring this to Earth2.net and you wanted to bring this to the world at large. So again, just want to say thank you. I'm going to keep this very brief, but really this is just a thank you to every single one of you. Bye.
Yay!
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike, for letting us do this program for the site. I was worried, like, going in, like, is this not geeky enough? Do you think, is this too childish or something like that? But no, I'm glad that you're happy to have this program on your network, and I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard.
Yes, and thank you, Mike. And if you ever want to have someone who is, like, a geek about the Kardashian Jenners, like, call me. I'm your girl. It's a new era of geek called reality geek.
Or the Fast and the Furious films.
Okay. But that is more, I think Kardashian is really my niche. Fast and the Furious can be anyone. I want to turn the tides and tell people to the Kardashians they don't see. I want to be a change maker, you know, in the Kardashian world. So I got ideas flowing out of the brain noggin. So,
but all of them are Kardashian shaped.
They might be all Kardashian shaped. Okay. Well, don't worry. Include the supporting characters of the Kardashian family too. Like, don't worry, Christian. Such as Kanye West, you know. Got it. Okay, I'm sorry. Go to the next audio recording.
Okay. The next bit of feedback is from Pandy.
Pandy!
Hello, Christian, and congratulations on a successful completion of a podcast tracking all the wonderful Disney films and the less than wonderful Disney films along the way. It's been a really good companion piece, and it's been fun to play along to some of the films that maybe I've not watched in a very long time. And equally, it's given me an appreciation for some of the new ones that I've never seen before as well. It was fun to be on the podcast a couple of times as well, and what fun it might be to come back at some point to look at something else Disney related. Chim chim cheroo. But yeah, well done for a consistent effort. It's rare to have an Earth 2 podcast which sticks to schedule in a way that is admirable, so well done you. It's also been nice to see or hear about your personal connections with the film as well, especially with heavy use of Emma as well, to see the sibling connection and the childhood use of Disney, very similar to the Wilson children experience, which I've covered and Ian has covered on his appearances on Part of Your World as well. I think we kind of grew up in a really good time for having Disney films as a thing, because they were good and they hadn't quite sold out yet. I think that's probably wrong, but it didn't seem like it had done from the mid 90s. We became aware of stuff. Obviously, it's been documented that I watched Hercules 3 times in the cinema, and The Emperor's New Groove twice, I think, as well. And just having them as like a cultural touchstone was really cool. And obviously, you got the buy-ins with McDonald's toys and the Disney cartoons on a Saturday morning as well. It was a high, heady time to be youthful and raised, not raised by Disney, but to have Disney as a reliable use of, a source rather, of content. And then through the podcast, it's been really interesting to chart the decline as well, to kind of see where things started to go wrong, whether it's hubris or, you know, douchebaggery that tanked some films or made some pretty bad decisions. And, you know, we ended up with Home on the Range, but there we go. And, you know, they're still there, and there'll always be grounds for you to come back and cover some of the older films, or sorry, the newer films, rather, complete opposite. As and when they come out, and to see what links there are between. On your advice, I haven't watched Wish, and I don't plan on watching Wish unless the kids really want me to. And it will be interesting to see their reaction to it. If they can see it and go, oh, there was a funny goat, and oh, look, Peter Pan is there as well. You know, that might be a thing, but, you know, as an adult, there's not much for these films nowadays, I don't think. That's kind of what the market that Pixar's cornered. But that's by the way. I'm rambling now. But congratulations on your wonderful podcast, and more power to you. And I look forward to whatever your next project might be. Will you be tracking every single dinosaur that's ever been? Is that geek culture enough to go on Earth too? Who knows? Anyway, all the best. Thank you very much. And titty, titty, tit, tits. What?
What? Yeah.
I should have warned you about the ending of that one.
Does he know that this is a children's podcast? Just kidding.
No, it fucking isn't.
Pandy, do not listen to the Christian propaganda. Just go watch Wish for yourself. Make your own opinions. There are so many worse movies that we have covered. And that probably you have seen. Just do it. Just do it. Don't listen to Christian. He's not.
Don't, Pandy. It's worse than Cats.
He's a straight white man, okay? His thoughts are irrelevant now. We're in 2025, we are canceling straight white men, all of them. You're dead to us. Anyway. Thank you, Pandy.
Thank you so much, Pandy. And yeah, there will be, obviously we're going to have the odd special episode, and yes, we will get to a certain Chim Chim Charu one. We went to last year during its anniversary, but we will get to it eventually. And yeah, I have thought every now and then about doing a dinosaur podcast. I don't know quite the format that would work and that isn't being done or that would be superior to what's out there already. Although, to be honest, there aren't that many great dinosaur podcasts, at least as far as I'm aware.
What about dinosaurs of the cinema / TV? So you cover like the Flintstones and Jurassic Park, and
that's kind of been done to death, to be honest. Especially like Jurassic Park, you know, like pointing out things that are inaccurate or different from the real animals.
You're not reviewing it as a dinosaur geek. You're reviewing it as it's a genre of dinosaur.
There's already a YouTube channel. It doesn't have a lot of videos, but it's pretty good. It's called Saurian Cinema, which kind of does that. He did an episode, for example, comparing all the major versions of The Lost World. If you have any ideas, then please let me know. But for now, I'm going to hang my podcasting at full-time race for a bit.
Oh, wait, Christian, I actually have a really good podcast idea. Why don't you watch all of the Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
No.
You will laugh. Okay, what's our next audio recording?
Okay, our next one is from somebody who did watch Wish, called Tom.
Hello, Christian, fellow co-hosts and fair listeners. In celebration of Christian's Herculean task of watching every Disney film, I thought I'd give thoughts on the ones most recently covered. Starting with Raya and the Last Dragon. Solidly entertaining, I was kind of most disappointed by the dragon being a smart talking screw-up. The cast was already wildly overloaded with all these gimmick characters with like con babies and smart mouth kids and armadillo bugs. I was hoping the dragon could be more of a serious role. I'll avoid going deeper on my thoughts lest I get Lindsay Ellis out of light company. However, in the episode discussing Raya and the Last Dragon, it was suggested that Disney could make a film about the Pontianak, which is apparently the vengeful ghost of a woman who dies in childbirth. Given how frequently mothers are missing in Disney, it would be quite poetic. Next up, Encanto. It's refreshing that this was a half-mystery, half-family drama. I kept waiting for her to have to go on an adventure and leave home to go and find the magic. It turns out that wasn't the plan at all. It also turns out that I'm not completely out on Lin-Manuel Miranda yet. He's not completely out of ideas. I'm not planning on listening to the soundtrack massively by itself, but that could change. We'll see. I thought the resolution was a little bit too easy, but the split in the family is really nicely done. It's emphasised well. They fly apart based on natural differences instead of the usual evil or greed. Definitely the best film of the four that I'm going to talk about. Next up, Strange World. This was kind of fascinating. You can tell from the start this wasn't going to work for the box office. Disney have a lot of trouble marketing these kinds of adventure films. The plot feels like something that would really be a great setup for like a weekly TV show. This is the kind of thing they could have thrown on Disney Plus for a while. I liked it quite a bit, and I think it does have the cult potential you talked about. But unfortunately, in monetary terms, Disney fans don't often reward originality. So it was predictable this was going to be a bit of a disaster. And last up, Wish. Oh, God. Oh, Christian, you were right about this one. It looks like it's animated to look like cutscenes from a Telltale game. It's got the lines around the edge of everything, which I used to love that effect, and now it just makes it look cheap. Even the star, like looking like an emoticon, feels incredibly lazy. The town that they live in feels like a... Well, it makes the town from Frozen look lived in. And that's a very low bar. It does the only real upside of it is it does have one thing that's been missing, which is an actual Disney villain. He's generic and he's paper thin, but at least he's trying. I wish, personally, that Disney sets it up for future projects. You can celebrate Disney without infantilizing it. Just look at Enchanted, for example. Christian, your Die Another Day comparison was absolutely spot on. Hollow gimmicks, no real heart to it at all. So anyway, congratulations to Christian for keeping this going for so long with such a brilliant group of co-hosts. I've definitely gone out of my way to see stuff I'd never have seen otherwise. Mr. Toad, all the way up to a baby goat with the voice of Alan Tudyk's Clayface. Enjoy the hiatus, old chum. All the best. Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Emma, any reactions to that?
I mean, just the malignment of Wish on this freaking podcast is next. I'm kidding. No, Wish is really bad, but I just don't know if it deserves all the hate that you and all your friends have given it. I don't know. But thank you, Tom, for writing in, even if you might be wrong, you know.
You're not wrong, Tom.
I am going to call you old chum from now on because I love that.
That's a Batman 66 thing. That's a Batman called Robin.
Well, I'm going to call you old chum from now on.
Okay.
I threatened Christian with using my bad British accent, and the threat has come through.
Oh, shit. Any gut reactions to any of the things you said about the other films?
No, some of them I haven't seen. So I haven't seen, Strange World. What was the other ones that he mentioned? Ryan and the Last Dragon I saw, but a long time ago. And then what was the fourth one he mentioned?
He mentioned Encanto.
Oh, Encanto. Yeah, I know Encanto's great. Yeah. I do sort of agree that the conclusion fell flat, but I do like that the conflict was not external, it was internal. I think that's a rarity in Disney, is to it's actually just family drama. It's not, which feels more like something that could actually happen. And it's a surprise, surprise, but I also like that she did not get powers in the end. I really thought she was going to. And then when she didn't, I was like, you know what? Good for Disney.
It's funny you say that because me and Mick, the person I reviewed it with, we sort of came to the conclusion she actually does kind of have a power, but it's not like an obvious one because she is the glue that holds the family together. It's whether it's an actual power or one, an ability she just has, she still has some of it. It's just not an obvious gift.
Yeah. No, I think her power is love, but that's a fake power, so we don't care about that.
Yeah, but you read the Harry Potter books, you know that love is a greater magic than any other. So
yeah, totally, duh, obviously can cure death.
Just from the same woman who hates trans people, but we won't get into that. Yeah. And now, finally, we hear from Ian,
Mr. Honore. Greetings from the brother Wilson that goes by the name of Ian, the guy behind the Flick Chart forum, and one half of
Day and Night.
That nearly worked. Anyway, as someone who knows something about finishing a podcast series after you've run out of subject matter, either finitely like Shake and Blake, or with scope for future instalments like For Your Ears Only, I can say with authority that you are to be congratulated for seeing out the Part of Your World project. Not only that, but to do it with a rotating cast of guest hosts and the organisation that requires, then I truly doff my cap. For my part, it was a pleasure contributing to the episodes on Dumbo, Robin Hood and The Great Mouse Detective. And I was also in the Fun and Fancy Free review as well. I do mean to undertake a full Disney film rewatch at some point when I'm not watching dozens of other films simultaneously for other podcast projects. And when I do, I'll have this as something of a companion piece to complement my viewing experience. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I will leave you and your good sister with a question. Who is the greatest Disney villain in your opinion, other than Walt Disney, Michael Eisner, or Jeffrey Katzenberg. Cheerio!
It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
So, thank you so much, Ian, for helping me with this project, and thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Ian. Thank you for acknowledging that I am an amazing sister. I think you said something like, you're a great sister. I'm like, well, fuck yeah, I am. Like, obviously. This is not news. But thank you for saying it. I'm glad it's recorded.
So, before we get into the question, he mentioned the possibility of doing a Disney rewatch. Do you ever think you'll do a full Disney rewatch?
Not a full one. I think I will skip around to my favorites. I might revisit some ones that I haven't seen in a while. Maybe like, no, not Snow White. I'm trying to think, like The Jungle Book and Lion King. I didn't review with you, so I didn't get to see those, and I haven't seen those in a while.
Have you ever seen The Great Mouse Detective?
I don't think so.
Give it a watch. It's a Sherlock Holmes homage / adaptation.
Okay. I was too focused on thinking about my answer to his question.
Okay, so first off, I think there is definitely something to, you know, a creator of something being a franchise's worst enemy. Like, think, you know, J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, or like the fact that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, he actually killed Sherlock Holmes in the stories because he was tired about writing him. And there's a bunch of other creators you can talk about, like until like the sequel trilogy, people would say the worst enemy of Star Wars was George Lucas.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual villains, in terms of like actual villains within the films, Emma, quick gun to your head, what is your answer?
I think it's going to be Frollo. Wait, did I say that right? Frollo?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Frollo. I think he is evil. I mean, if you're thinking about pure evil, I think that's him. He's a creep. He's creepily animated. He has a good song. I don't know. I think in the realm of Disney enemies, he is like the one that still gives me like, ugh, yeah. You know? I will say, I think Mother Gothel is underrated. Mm-hmm. I think she deserves more credit for being evil. She uses like emotional manipulation. She's not outwardly evil. She's more like hidden until it's revealed, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Frollo.
That is my exact answer. Don't get me wrong, I think Disney Animation has the best set of villains of any film franchise ever. I think I said this before on Hunchback of Notre Dame, but Frollo is the best because for a lot of reasons, because he is real, and because we pointed out during the show how Magnifico, they were throwing a lot of things into trying to make him evil, but this one, it actually works. Like the fact that he's a super racist and like a hypocrite and religious and creepy and stuff like that, that all ties into like his.
Yeah, he's also like a sexual predator. There's just like a lot to unpack there.
And yet he's, I mean, he's a hateful character, but he's not so hateful that you, at least for me, you want to turn it off because A, he is very well animated. You can't be an effective villain if you're poorly animated. And B, the voice actor, Tony J, just like brings him to life, like this very grave, elderly British authoritarian voice. Kind of like Christopher Lee or a bunch of other like British actors that excel at being villains.
Yeah, I stay tuned to watch his descent. He's just so creepily animated, like, and I think what I don't love about Disney movies is the villain songs. That's not like my favorite. I know you really like them, but he does have a really fucking good one.
Yeah, he has the best one.
Yeah.
There are lots of great ones. I sort of see him, the stepmother from Cinderella and Mother Gothel, serve as an unholy trinity of bad Disney step-parents. But I think he's the worst because in addition to being like ableist, he's also like really classist and like he hates gypsies and, you know, super racist and like religious bigot. There's no proof for this, but I bet you anything he would also be an anti-Semite and he would be anti-gay and anti-trans.
Oh, yeah. And he'd definitely be like a rapist if he could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, pulling the curtain back, I have put together a poll, like like a sort of like March Madness thing, like with 63 other Disney villains. I'd love like to do it on the site sometime, kind of like for better or worse did with the Douchies.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Anyway, great job, Christian. Do you have any more notes, final thoughts?
I think that's about it. But thank you for everybody who wrote in. Thank you, Lauren. And thank you, Lauren, as well, for contributing to Frozen 2 when Emma was too frozen out. Thank you so much, Donovan, for joining me for the reviews from the very start. Pinocchio and Winnie the Pooh, it's great hearing from you why you love Aladdin so much. And that's, I definitely appreciate that film more, like talking out with you then. Thank you both Pandy and Ian for helping me cover your favorite ones, and Kelly as well, Kelly Wilson, Pandy's wife. And thanks Tom for like helping me relive the Jungle Book and The Lion King, as well as Ichabod and Mr. Toad, the one good package film, Emma, which I think you would get more enjoyment out of. And Big Hero 6. Thank you, Will, for joining me on a bunch of them and helping me thaw somewhat on the Frozen films and providing some perspective on it that I couldn't before. Thank you, Dave Probert, for joining me on Black Cauldron and the Wreck-It-Ralph films and the Atlantis film. I'm glad. I was worried with the Atlantis one in particular, that it was one that I was like throwing you another bad film after Black Golden, but I'm glad you liked that one too.
I love Atlantis. I don't know what you're talking about. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Thank you, Mixie, for joining me for Little Mermaid as well as Encanto. I really enjoyed discussing those. Thank you, Harry, for joining me and Donovan for Dinosaur, even though it's a crappy movie and there's a lot to be disappointed in. It's a great reviewing with both of you. Thank you, Skylar, for joining me and Will on Home on the Range. And I hope we can talk together on some of the special episodes we're doing. Thank you, Yvonne, for Princess and the Frog. And if we ever do some Pixar films, I know you're higher on this than I am, then you're definitely invited for that one. And thank you, Dan, for joining me and Donovan on A Goofy Movie. And finally, thank you, Joe and Llama God. Yes, that's his podcasting name, for helping me cover Ryan the Last Dragon. I know it was a struggle for you, but I hope that we had a good experience doing it. I think that's everybody. Oh, no. How can I forget? One, Mike, thank you so much for airing this podcast on Urcha.net and helping bring it, making it a reality. And thank you, Emma, first and foremost, for helping me bring it to life and for putting up with my bullshit.
Yeah, I thought you were doing it as like a joke, like, oh, I forgot someone, didn't I?
But no, I was saving you for last, but I was going through, I made sure I didn't forget anybody.
Well, Christian, I want to thank you for taking me on this journey with you. It wasn't enjoyable at all times because some of these movies are hard to get through, but no way I'd rather hang out with my brother for hours on end than to record our thoughts on bad Disney movies.
And good ones.
And congratulations. This is a huge feat. I think I gave my real speech in the Moana episode, but this is, it took determination to get all through all this. I could not have been able to do it. It was a long-lasting endeavor, and you deserve a round of applause. Woo!
Thank you.
And I cannot wait for you to join me on Keeping Up with the Kardashians podcast. It's just going to be a nonstop thrill ride. You're going to have so much fun, and it's going to be great. I can't wait for you to enjoy this world.
Well, tough shit, you are going to have to wait forever.
I'm just going to keep saying it until you are like, you think like, oh, wait, is it actually true? Am I actually doing it? And I'm like, yep, yeah, bitch. No, yeah, bitch,
I'm too stubborn.
That's true. That's fair. You are too stubborn. You would never.
So Joel, before we close things, Emma, just one last time, is there anything else you've been enjoying lately? Like to help us especially through these dark times we have ahead?
I wish I could say something good, but I have been watching the Kardashians. I'm sorry. I disappointed you all. Something that I have not been watching but doing is refurbishing furniture, and that is fun. That's all. Cool. What about you? What are you watching / what are you doing?
So I have two things. One is a recent thing I've been watching and enjoying, and that's okay. Parks and Rec. I've been doing a full rewatch of it after... Actually, at Emma's recommendation, picking up the audiobook of Welcome to Pawnee by Jim O'Hare. And that's yep. Jerry. That's Jerry from Parks and Rec.
Do you mean Gary?
No, I mean Larry.
Oh, you mean Terry?
No, Harry. No, Jerry Gurgich. It's a really good audiobook. He's a really good narrator. He seems like he goes a bit into his career also. He was actually in a shitty 90s movie with Matt LeBlanc involving a chimp playing baseball. It's amusing to listen to.
I know. I sort of want to find that. See what
we should actually.
Oh, God.
In terms of Parks and Rec, I finished season 4 last week and took a bit of a break. I will get back to it soon, but it's been a nice to rewatch, especially after listening to the audiobook, and I'm sure it's good written as well. And the second one, this is a general one. What are you watching and enjoying? What's a good thing to watch and enjoy? Watch Disney films.
Yeah!
Especially the ones they've covered, and especially if you can watch them, A, on a bigger screen, like at a cinema, or like I did with a live orchestra. I watched Aladdin with a live orchestra last summer at the Mann Center in Philly, and it's great. Definitely like see if your local orchestra has anything like that, or if they're like doing a re-screening of it. I definitely recommend it.
I thought you were going to say something cute, like make sure you watch it with your best friends and cover it on a podcast. That's the only way to do it. But no, you were not cute.
I am not cute. This is one of my many shortcomings.
Yeah. Well, I tried.
That's it, everybody. We will return for Zootopia 2 or Frozen 3 or whatever comes out whenever we feel like it. We will do some special episodes in the meantime every now and then.
Around here, however, we don't look backwards for very long. We keep moving forward, opening up new doors and doing new things. And curiosity keeps us leading down new paths. Walt Disney.
I can't think of a better ending, even with some of the controversial back to Disney. But yeah, Walt said it best. Goodbye, everybody, and best wishes.
Best wishes.